Escape of Cthulhu presents The Call of Cthulhu Playtest Transatlantic Terror by John Hook.
Fantastic. Okay, so if everyone's ready, we'll go ahead and get started. So when we last left the game, Felicity Morgan, George Hurst, Catherine Kennedy, and Augustus Vanderbilt, you guys had all broken into a cabin that's being used by crew members, and there were three bunking in that room. Gentleman by the name of Todd, and then our two mysterious, slightly strange stewards that have been nowhere to be seen, except for Hurst did catch a glimpse of one of them, handlebar mustache guy, throwing a bag overboard. No sight of them. And searching their room, came up basically empty-handed. You know, Todd had all of his regular personal effects and stuff, but handlebar mustache and Beardy, they just had one suitcase apiece. Or at least you're assuming they each had one, instead of one of them having two and one of them having none. But each suitcase had a single hat and a single coat on the inside, and that was it. Nothing else. So that's where you guys left off. And then Richard Rockefeller, he was able to successfully track down where the widow Osterman, Mrs. Joanna Osterman, what cabin is hers, and she promptly said no thank you and shut the door in his face. He then went and found Mrs. Dodd, and Mrs. Dodd, you know, thought it was unusual, but really had no opinion one way or the other about the information that Mrs. Osterman had vouched for a couple of weirdos that are now working on the ship. So then Richard left it at that, and that was it. So,
well, are we still in the stateroom where we took the door off the hinges, or yes, have we gotten past that?
No,
I believe
not yet.
We had someone just come in on us, right?
No, that was when you were attempting to break in, and a different steward was in the. Y'all were still in the hallway. You successfully bribed him turning the other cheek as you guys, you know, and he even helped. He says, "Well, if you these doors are kind of flimsy, if you actually kind of lift, you can lift it right off the hinge, and boom!" So he took the door right off the hinge.
You know, the coats and the hats that we found, were they like top coat or like overcoats or?
Yeah, they're long overcoat, trench coat type of style. And
did they look like worn, as if they'd seen a lot of use, or are they pretty new?
Well, they're older. Yeah, they've been used. I mean, they're not pristine. They're older, you know.
Anything in the coat pockets?
No, the pockets and everything were empty.
Anyway, I believe we were on our way out. So
yeah, so I'm gonna pick up this session with you guys in the cabin. So as y'all leave the cabin, what are you gonna do with this busted door? I'm just curious.
Pop it up.
I suppose there's no having seen it. Been removed from the hinges. Can we attempt to replace it, or is that
no? Somebody give me a mechanical repair roll.
Oh well, boy, that is not my strong suit. Anyone else?
Miss Morgan thinks she could have a try at it. Wouldn't be
not me
too good of a chance, but it'd be a basic chance.
With that roll, I think we need to hit it with a hammer or something in order to get it into place. Anyway, so, it wasn't our fault. It was some steward who took it off its hinges, so nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
Miss Morgan, I'm assuming your roll failed.
Oh,
and,
no.
And Mr. Hurst has been stopped.
Yes. Yeah, that was a fail.
First class.
Okay.
Yeah, well, let's just leave it propped up against the bulkhead and make our way.
They'll be questioning us about it.
No problem. All right. So, yeah, you're on C deck. What would you like to do?
I think I need a drink and then maybe a nice massage.
Mm.
It's been a rather exciting morning so far.
So let's see. Osterman is not willing to talk to us. Dodd has no insights.
Not that you're aware of right now. Because you're down on C deck, and Rockefeller's the one that's had the information with Osterman and Dodd. So is this group of guys going to – are you guys all going to migrate back up to where you belong on A deck? A yes. deck and B deck?
Yeah, pretty okay. much.
All right. And remember, it's late morning. The dinner service, which is what we would typically think of as lunch, that has not yet started. So as you guys are migrating back up to A and B decks, wherever you decided to go, Rockefeller, so you just – you basically had a swing and a miss with Osterman yep. and we'll call it a foul ball with Dodd, just because she didn't know how to really reply to the information you provided to her about Osterman.
Yep, that's fine.
What would you like to do?
I'm hoping that I haven't quite left Mrs. Dodd yet.
You have not,
because I have one final play I'd like to make.
Certainly, certainly, you may certainly do so
in a vain attempt to actually do something.
Okay.
Mrs. Dodd, I believe Mrs. Osterman might not be feeling too well. Perhaps I could escort you down to check on her?
That would be lovely, dear. Yes. And so she finishes her tea, and she goes, I certainly would love to catch up with her again.
Oh, wonderful. Right this way, ma'am. And I'll offer her my arm as a you know, good gentleman.
Okay, and she greatly accepts it, and you know she's slow, she's older, she's not you know frail, but she appreciates the gesture, and so you guys make it down the hall, and there's Osterman's cabin up ahead.
Okay, we walk up to the door. would you care to knock, or would you like me to? Would you give me the honor?
Oh, thank you, dear. And she reaches up and raps lightly on the door. You would be surprised if anyone could hear that light of a knock. She raps lightly on the door and says, "Joanna, it's me. It's Elizabeth." And there's no answer. Hmm.
I will. Perhaps if we knocked a little louder.
Oh, please, be my guest.
And I'll provide a slightly more solid knock on the door.
You effectively knock on the door. Do you want to say anything or just do a knock?
No, just knock.
Okay. Give me a listen roll, please.
Listen. Oh, wait a second.
Actually, give me a listen.
Why do I always forget I need dice for this?
Oh, I am sorry. I realize this is the first time you've played a role-playing game. You should probably come with dice, pencil, and paper.
Oh, man.
I guess we should have told you that.
Yeah. Should have. You know, it's an important piece of information here.
Yeah.
I believe that is going to be a failure.
And a spot hidden. Go ahead and do a listen and a spot hidden.
Yes. Listen is a failure by 20 or so.
Okay.
Spot hidden is a failure by even more.
Okay. to the best of your knowledge, no one is home.
I'm a businessman. I'm not a detective.
That's right.
Well, I do host. I believe she was not feeling well earlier. I do hope she's okay in there. Perhaps we should ask one of the stewards to open the door and check on her.
You could always just take it off the hinges.
and you actually see the color on Mrs. Dodd's face drained away. She goes, "You don't think something terrible has happened? I don't think she has a weak heart."
Well, let us check on her just to be certain, shall we?
And Mrs. Dodd starts to get weepy and teary. She goes, "Hurry, hurry, boy, hurry, hurry, go get a steward, hurry." She's now getting really, really upset.
I will ring for the steward.
Okay. So
I'm sure every group of cabins has to have their own private steward, and I'm sure they have to not be too far away, so.
Yeah, there's not a private steward per cabin, ringing for a steward, I mean, you're in the hallway, you're not inside, you're not in a room, so, you know, do you want to, like, go and shout for someone or something?
I assume there would be some expected way to summon a steward quickly.
Okay.
A bell in the hall or, you know.
Yeah, you can shout down the hall or run down the hall and try and look for one.
Or they have some office, you know.
Yeah,
right,
there's
nearby something like this.
Yeah, there's areas. So, do you physically leave to go do that?
No, I do not.
Okay, so you want to just raise your voice and shout for help?
Yes.
Okay.
In a polite and dignified manner, I'm not just bellowing.
Okay, so you start shouting for help. And several doors in this hallway open up, and you can see some curious looky-loos poke their heads out.
That's not what I was trying to not account. I was trying not that not to happen. I just
well, there was me, only,
steward.
The stewards aren't just roaming the halls. So
service on this ship is terrible.
write a very stern worded letter to the
most
White
certainly
Star
shall. Line. Regardless, does a steward show up?
Yes, eventually a steward does show up, but you have definitely raised a commotion. In fact, you see most of the doors have not fully closed, and every now and then you see hair and eyeballs as people are peeking out to see what's going on.
This is going to be in Hearst's papers for sure.
A young man in a white coat shows up, and he goes, yes, how can I help you?
Yes.
And by now, Mrs. Dodd is just, I mean, she's verklempt. I mean, she's just like, ah, blah, 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 and so she's begging.
Mrs. Dodd is concerned for the well-being of Mrs. Osterman. Please open this door immediately, sir. We need to check on her.
Yep.
Yes.
Is this happening on the A deck?
It is happening on A deck. Currently, as this is happening, you guys are propping the door back up against the wall. And are going to be exiting C deck. You know, yeah, you got to make it back to the stairwell or the lift, whichever one you want to take, and you know, rise back up to A deck. So you guys are nowhere near being able to come in on this.
Okay.
So the steward goes by all means, and he raps on the door smartly, he also asks, whose cabin is this? And you guys tell him.
I just told him.
Oh, did you? I missed that part.
Yeah, I said Mrs. Osterman.
Okay, so he raps on the door and calls
out. We did that, man. Open the damn door.
And calls out her name and calls out her name. And so Richard dies alone. And so then he produces a key, and just as he starts working the key in the knob, the door opens up from the inside, and Mrs. Osterman is standing there, and she goes, "What is the meaning of this? I have wished to be left alone. Is there some reason why I'm unable to have privacy on this ship?" And you hear a bunch of doors in the hallway shut. God. Almost at once. They're just boop, 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 boop.
Hearst is going to have a field day with this. Perhaps I can spin it to Pulitzer first.
Elizabeth reaches forward to try and grab, to touch Joanna Osterman's hands.
Yes.
To show her concern and her relief that her good friend is alive and well. And Joanna recoils her hand and says, Steward, I do wish to be left alone.
I am going to be very rude at the moment and say, Mrs. Osterman, we will leave you alone in just a moment. You just have one or two small things to explain first, like why you left Mrs. Dodd standing out here in the hallway, worried about your safety. Horrible thing to do to a friend.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Now, please leave, the two of you! And she insists, and she backs up and starts shutting the door.
I stick my foot in.
The steward interposes with you.
I shove him out of the way.
All right, let's do grapples.
Oh, what's base on grapple?
Like 25,
25.
Yes,
25. So let's see. I fail by 58.
What'd you roll?
83.
Okay. Well, I failed also, but I failed less badly than you. So he does get his physical body in the way of you, and he's like, this is her cabin. She does wish to be left alone. And Mrs. Dodd starts crying again. You know,
dear God.
And you can hear doors opening and closing again up and down the hallway. And so the steward goes, sir, please. And he's trying to like hold you back without holding you, without putting his hands on you. He's like interposing his chest and he's got his hands up to try and like be a human shield for the doorway. And he's like, please, I must ask that you step back.
Really, Mrs. Osterman, how could you be so incredibly rude?
And Mrs. Osterman, she slams the door on the steward's hand.
So
the steward screams, and he's like, oh, Mom, I'm so sorry, pardon me. And he's screeching and everything, and you hear all the other doors again slam shut down the hallway.
Presumably with a hand like that, that means the steward will be easier to push out of the way.
So do you want to try and barge your way through?
Yes. I'm going to push him out of the way and push the door open.
All right. Give me another grapple roll. So let's just roll percentile and see who does better.
Oh, dear God. 95.
The steward fell into you and was able to push you back enough to where now Osterman's door did shut, and Mrs. Dodd is going away crying. She's walking down the hall crying. She's leaving.
Steward, what is your name? Your name.
Marcus.
You only have one name.
Giles Marcus.
Giles Marcus. Well, Mr. Marcus, we shall see about your behavior this morning. And I will walk off after Miss Dodd in an attempt to comfort her.
And you can hear him saying, my apologies, sir, as he's cradling his injured fingers. And he goes the opposite direction. So Mrs. Dodd is, you can see that she's gone down a hallway and she's approaching another door, apparently her cabin, as she starts to enter her room.
Mrs. Dodd, I must apologize. Your friend Mrs. Osterman must be very disturbed about something to act in such a horrid manner.
Mrs. Dodd says, I think it must be my fault.
Your fault? Certainly not.
We barged in on her, and the poor dear was frightened.
Mrs. Dodd, we did no such thing. Please believe me, as an honorable gentleman.
So she reaches up.
Which you know
I am. She reaches up to take your hands. She reaches up to take your hands and hers.
I will take her hands as well.
And she starts patting your hand. And she says, sweetie, I am so sorry, but I'm afraid that your behavior may have scared her. And I think it would probably be best if we just didn't speak again
Oh,
I would really appreciate it if you respected my privacy now.
She's breaking up with you.
She pats her hands, and then she turns her back on you to enter into her cabin.
Shun.
Completely understood, Mrs. Dodd. Have a nice day.
And she quietly goes into her room and shuts the door, and you can hear her weeping through the paper-thin walls.
And then I'm going to go in search of Hurst.
Okay. All right.
And I'm just going to save this. I'm just going to save this. Say this now to save time. When I find him, the first thing I'm going to punch him.
So Morgan, Hurst, Kennedy, and Vanderbilt, you guys have now gotten back up. Do you want to go to B deck or A deck? There's amenities on both. It is getting closer to the dinner time. So it's getting close to 12:30, so the meal service will be up on A deck.
Okay. I would say Miss Morgan would want to go watch some skeet shooting if people were doing it.
Okay, that'll be on B deck at the stern of B deck. Okay.
Well, I'll go with Felicity.
All right. So the ladies are going to go and watch some skeet shooting on the stern end of B deck. Hurst, Vanderbilt.
I think I'll probably. Yes, exactly.
All right. So you'll head up to the dining room. Or actually the lounge. Yeah, you can get drinks in the lounge throughout the day. Okay. So you guys head over to the lounge. That's also on B deck. Y'all are hanging out. It's a pretty quiet morning. You guys do start hearing some folks at a nearby table talking about some kind of a ruckus that was going on upstairs in the hallway. It was terrible. In fact, you hear the name Rockefeller being thrown around in some sort of fight.
Ooh, I'm going to stick my head in and say, did I hear you say Rockefeller?
Yes, and so these women start talking about how Rockefeller was trying to barge into some woman's room,
the chap's lost it.
Well, they're assuming it's some sort of jilted lover, but then he started a fight with the steward, and the steward was doing everything he could to stop Rockefeller from breaking into the woman's cabin to probably hit her. So.
Huh. Dear.
That doesn't sound like the Dickie Rockefeller I know. Breaking into a woman's cabin, maybe, but starting a fight, no.
Rockefeller, you're up on A, and you hear the whistle blow the dinner service is being served, is now available.
Okay. I go to dinner.
Okay. And those of you on B deck, stewards come around and tweet a little whistle saying that dinner is served.
Any sign of mustache and beard?
No, you have not seen any sign of them. They stand out enough now, and y'all are cognizant, aware, you know, of them now, that if they were to show up at all, you guys would zero in on them pretty quickly. But so far, no sign of them.
Have we questioned Todd at all?
You have not. You know his name is Todd.
Yeah.
But you don't
actually
know.
He was working that breakfast when we were.
Was he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We checked. So maybe he just works breakfasts. So maybe we can track him down then.
Yeah.
Actually, John, I had a question. How long do the meal services last? Because I'm sure with 200 people, they can't just expect everyone to, you know, cut whatever they were doing in their high-profile lives and come sit down.
They run about 2 hours.
Okay, cool. So you could show up late and still be
absolutely
fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right.
Okay. Well, depending on how long we were, Miss Kennedy and I were watching skeet shooting and if anything interesting was happening, I don't know if we necessarily would go immediately back.
Okay. As far as the skeet shooting is concerned, if anyone is interested, you basically have to get your name on a list with the steward that runs the skeet shooting and manages that. And then once your name is ready, another steward will make the rounds along A and B decks, looking for you to inform you that your turn is up and ready, and then you can go down and participate in the skeet shooting. And there's a nominal cost; it's like 50 cents or something to participate in the skeet shooting. That just basically covers ammunition and maintenance for the weapons. Both of the shotguns are stored in an arms locker on it's on B deck. It's actually in the ship detective's office. But
all right.
But anyways, so if you guys are interested in doing skeet shooting, that's y'all can do that.
I don't know. I think Miss Morgan would just be content watching and seeing how here. The gentlemen do.
Okay. Okay. And I did a little research, and skeet shooting is actually was first introduced as a Olympic event in the mid-20s, and so it grew in popularity pretty quickly. So this is a pretty popular sport at this time, especially for the Olympics.
It is nice to see something excited after that failed attempt to break into any clue in that room.
Yes. It was
really boring.
Yes. It was quite strange how lightly they packed, but I do say it was quite a letdown. But yes.
Keep an eye open, Felicity. Those two stewards should be around here somewhere.
Yes, I don't believe I only remember the one, the mustachioed fellow.
I would recognize any of those two, so I will let you know if I see them.
Very well, we shall keep our eyes peeled, Miss Kennedy.
I will put my arm around her arm and keep walking.
You could probably just walk around the promenade on up to dinner service then.
Okay. So as you arrive for dinner service, you actually see Rockefeller seated.
I'll meander over to him, and we haven't heard any of the rumors yet. So just, Mr. Rockefeller, how fare you today?
Miss Morgan, so good to see you. And how has your afternoon gone?
Oh, it was quite uneventful.
I stand up politely.
Oh, very good.
Do you care to have a seat?
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Oh, it is Miss Kennedy there too? Sorry.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Miss Kennedy. I didn't see you.
I didn't see you behind Miss Morgan's enormous hat.
and breasts.
Last I saw you were in the company of Mr. Hurst and Mr. Vanderbilt.
Well, yeah, they were a little bit hungry, so they headed for dinner before us. I mean, was it dinner or lunch?
For a drink.
Oh, yes. Yeah, for a drink.
For drinks.
Yeah, they went for drinks.
Oh, well, hopefully they will join us here for dinner shortly. I should very much like to speak with Mr. Hurst.
I'm going to head to dinner anyway, so.
Yeah, I think we've had enough liquid fortification to head into a meal situation now, so yes.
For what it's worth, Miss Kennedy, I must apologize for yesterday. I now completely believe you that there is a difficulty with the two stewards and with Mrs. Osterman as well, actually.
Is that so? Yes. Why do you say that, Richard?
She's acting very strangely, I'm afraid. She very much upset Mrs. Dodd earlier today.
Oh, poor thing. We should just, keep an eye on those three then.
As I look around, do I see either Osterman or Dodd?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
It hasn't been that long since the ruckus, though, in the hall. So
sure.
They may not be in the mood to dine publicly right now.
I'll
Vanderbilt and I arrived.
Yes, if you guys wanted to come upstairs to the dinner service, yeah, you've arrived and you can see the ladies are sitting with Rockefeller.
Yeah, we head on over and join them.
All right.
Well, Dickie, I hear you've made quite an impression this morning.
Mr. Vanderbilt, Mr. Hurst, yes. Mr. Hurst, I wonder if I might have a word with you in private for a moment, sir.
Yes, certainly.
It is regarding the Miss Kennedy's concerns, and I have some information about Miss Osterman I would like to share with you.
We should definitely. Oh,
why don't you share it with all of us, Richard?
I would like to speak to Mr. Hurst alone for a moment.
That's rude. I say.
If you would care to step out on deck, Mr. Hurst.
Near the edge.
I'll follow. Sure.
Now, psychology roll.
I'm oblivious.
Two things, Mr. Hurst. First, yes, I believe Miss Kennedy is completely right to be concerned. There is something very wrong with Mrs. Osterman.
I'm glad you're coming around to my way of thinking, Rockefeller. Yes.
There was a scene with her and Mrs. Dodd earlier, and I should very much like to know what is going on with that woman. And second,
good to have you on board.
And second, and I'd punch him. That's for getting me involved with this nonsense.
My intent is just to
insult him and just express my extreme displeasure, not to actually do him damage.
I was going to say, if your intent is to do damage, I want you to roll. If your intent is to just be dramatic, then it's free.
Yes, it's just a dramatic punch. I'm not trying to start a fight or hurt anyone.
All right.
Can I try and dodge?
Certainly.
I actually put some of my points into dodge. We'll see.
Ah, yes. You went to those elite dodgery classes, right?
Dodging Academy, yes.
I fail 72 out of 41.
Well, you were at bottom of your class.
I say, Richard, what's got into you?
As I said, Mr. Hurst. Anyway, I feel much better now. Thank you. Now, how do we go about finding around?
Did anyone see this?
You know what? Let's see. The two of you, Rockefeller and Hurst, 120. So one of you roll a percentile and try and get 60 or less.
I'll roll just because I know I will probably fail. And I do.
And you are witnessed, and people, you can hear gasps, and you hear things like, "It's that Rockefeller fellow again," and people are scurrying off.
Oh dear, Richard.
So, Mr. Hurst, how do we go about finding out what is going on with this Osterman woman? Well, you're the expert in all this.
Shall we join the others?
Yes. Let's go back in.
Before Rockefeller and Hearst come back in, Morgan, Kennedy, and Vanderbilt, you guys are already hearing rumors about how Rockefeller is assaulting Hearst out on the promenade. And those rumors are just, you know, they're just blazing a white hot trail right out of the dining room and into the rest of the ship when they finally do come back in.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll get really interesting when everyone sees us walk in together.
Just yes. Look over to Miss Kennedy and say, "Oh, those boys so hot blooded."
Can't take them anywhere.
Oh my God! What happened to your eye?
It doesn't look that bad, does it? Come on.
No, that's how he always looks. It's fine.
Say, well, gentlemen, I hear you've got the. You've got the dining room astir, a buzz with your what you were talking about outside, and Mr. Rockefeller, how you were dealing with Mr. Hurst.
Yeah, so much of being discreet anyway. So what's our next move?
Well,
I would think it obvious. I very pointedly say you need to figure out how to get into Osterman's cabin.
And maybe we could talk to this Todd character?
That would be my guess as the best course of inquiry.
Who is Todd, and what does he have to do with anything?
Todd is the bunkmate of the two strangely hirsute gentlemen.
Ah, I see.
And, or at least of a mustache, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The guy that you got your information from, he felt positive that Beardy and Mustachy were bunking with Todd. So the three of them were rooming. So there was bunk beds and then a single bed. They were, I guess, in the bunk beds. Todd, you assume, is in the single bed.
And I'll inform Mr. Mr. Rockefeller that we found they had two suitcases in the room they were staying. We found our way in there. The door somehow became open. The only thing, strangely, that they had packed was a jacket and a hat. No other possessions.
No, it is damn peculiar, I'll give you that. But, I mean, dash it all. It's not like they've done anything to us. We have nothing to complain about as passengers on this voyage.
No, but, and Jim, you haven't informed us yet of the strange goings on with Osterman. Just the rumors.
Yeah, I know. I did tell you that she caused a scene with Mrs. Dodd. What more do you need to know? That should be enough.
Very well, sir. Thank you for keeping us ladies informed.
Oh my.
If there's anything else Mr. Hurst needs to know for his investigation, I will be sure to tell him.
Honestly, I would say that before getting into any other room, we should go and find the head steward and ask him to bring Todd to us. So we
bring
may
him
ask
to my
him a few questions.
Bring him before the tribunal.
Are you not worried about the impropriety of asking for the services of a particular steward, Miss Kennedy? That I can see Mr. Hurst's papers might have a field day with that.
I'm not planning to do it myself. That's what I'm asking you, gentlemen, to do it for me.
Do I recognize the steward who sat us yesterday at yesterday's dinner? Is he at all in attendance in the dining room today, looking about the wait staff?
The one that sat you at yesterday's dinner was one of the weirdos.
Oh, okay.
But for this morning's breakfast,
you were
sat by someone who certainly looked like he belonged as a White Star employee.
Okay, and he was the one who gave us Todd's name as the bunkmate of the beard and mustache. Okay, that's the guy I'm looking for. Do I see him in attendance? Excellent. I say, just a minute, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to see if I can get us one step closer to making actual contact with these strange gentlemen. I get up and I go over to the steward and I take him aside by the elbow and I say, you were telling us a little bit about this Todd fellow who bunks with those two stewards we were asking about.
Yes, sir.
Is he in attendance at this meal? Is he working the dining room here today?
He is, sir. Do you need him?
Can you point him out to me, please?
Yes, sir. That's him right over there, and you see a blonde fellow.
Okay. I mark him carefully so I would recognize him.
Okay.
And I head back to our table.
All right.
And I point Todd out to the rest of to Catherine and Felicity and the rest and say, "That's Todd over there. I suggest that as the meal begins to wrap up, we take him aside and see if he can give us any information on his curious cabin mates."
Why do we have to wait?
Rockefeller on him. Might scare him into a...
Go, Richard. Punching in the face.
Send Rockefeller.
Oh, very droll, Mr. Hurst. Mr. Vanderbilt, Miss Kennedy.
Why do we have to wait? Why don't we call him now?
Now. We're in the middle of dinner.
Let's enjoy our dinner. Yes.
Considering that Mr. Rockefeller has attracted a fair amount of attention, it might be better to wait until the meal starts to break up before we start questioning the staff, lest...
It's a little too early to initiate another scandal quite yet.
Yes, I'm trying to find a polite way of saying that.
Rockefeller's already assaulted one steward.
And I hear he broke a cabin door down in Sea Duck.
Oh, now you're just getting malicious.
Your skills as a journalist continue to astound, Mr. Hurst.
Yeah. So that's my suggestion. As dinner starts to wind its way down and guests start leaving.
Is there any sign of Osterman at all?
No, as dinner progresses, Osterman does not show up. You do eventually see Dodd.
Okay.
She does show up and gets a light meal, but Osterman does not show up.
Okay.
I would say to Richard, Richard, if you're so interested, maybe we could look into who is in the sleeping cabins to either side of her. Maybe. See if they've noticed anything strange.
I'm certain they have by now.
Other than your indiscretion earlier. Maybe she's shut herself in her room entirely.
Clearly, we just need to sound the ship's fire alarm and wait for everyone to assemble out on deck. Then we'll be able to sneak down and just take a look around.
Go out on deck and yell, "Iceberg!"
Yeah, that would not be at all in poor taste.
No. So dinner service is winding down. Okay. And a lot of the passengers have left to go and participate in the many fine amenities of the ship.
Okay. I'm going to snag Todd before he leaves the area.
Okay. He says, "Yes, sir. How can I help you?"
And ask him to join us over at the table and say, I have a few questions that I'd like to put to you regarding two of the stewards we observed yesterday. We found their conduct and demeanor and appearance rather at odds with what we're led to expect from the White Star Line. And we were told that they're actually bunkmates of yours.
So Todd has a very, well-trained, pleasant smile on his face. Mm-hmm. Right up until you say bunkmates of his, and he kind of – and you can almost hear him – under his breath, say, "Those guys."
So I gather that all is not exactly on the up and up with them.
Well, sir, to be completely honest, if I may.
Of course.
I don't know who they are. They're certainly not White Star caliber of men. I will be glad for this voyage to be over because I certainly hope that they get the boot and are not reemployed because they are certainly not White Star men.
Well, certainly their grooming is at odds with what we'd expect of White Star. But what can you tell us about their habits? Do you notice that they go out at strange times during the night or... come in at odd hours or don't keep to the regular ship's duty roster? Exactly what are they up to? Well, where are they employed in the ship?
I don't know. They were doing first class service, but they did not come back to our cabin last night, and so my assumption is that they've probably been relocated. I certainly hope to other service details. You know, they're certainly more fit for simple house cleaning, housekeeping, and other common services, if you'll pardon my frankness.
Have you spoken with them? Are they American, English, European?
Oh, they're Americans, sir. They're rather quiet and you know, quite frankly, I find them rude, and they just have, you know, very poor hygiene. It's just, you know, pretty. I'm not enjoying this trip, that's for sure.
When you say poor hygiene, exactly what do you mean?
Well, they not put too fine a point on it, sir. They have a smell. They have a rather foul odor to them that I find quite displeasing.
And do these gentlemen have names that you're aware of?
Yes, sir. And he goes, well, the gentleman that you've described with the mustache, his name is Daniel Kelly, and the gentleman with the very full beard, his name is Lester Shaw.
Lester Shaw. Well, I'll tell you what, Todd. Here's the number of the stateroom that I'm staying in. If they happen to return at all tonight, or if you see them coming in or out of your cabin or or about the ship as you're conducting your duties, please leave a message for me at my cabin. We'd like to take a closer look at these enigmatic gentlemen. I slip him a dollar.
Oh, well, thank you very much, sir. As you will, I will certainly keep you informed.
Before he goes away, I'll also hand him a bill or two and ask him if he could... Could you find out where they've been reassigned, what their current duty roster is?
That I can, sir. I can find that out for you right now, if you please.
That would be wonderful. Thank you.
I'll be right back. Would anyone care for a drink? Martinis?
Yes, please.
Gin? Bourbon? What can I help you with?
One martini for me.
Okay. Two, please.
All right. Yes, ma'am. Anyone else? Gentlemen? He eyeballs Rockefeller. He goes, sir, is there anything I could help you with?
Gin martini, hide the vermouth.
Yes, sir. And he's very respectful to you.
More like afraid.
That's how you earn it.
Hey, Jim, quick question. Have we seen either Jonathan Copperfield or Judith Farnsworth?
Yes, they did today. Come in during the dinner service. Uh-huh. You did. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't bring that up, but they did attend the lunch, you know, the noon dinner service.
And tomorrow is their wedding.
Tomorrow correct? Night is their wedding. Okay. Yep.
You know, I was thinking what could those two be after, and I just remember that Judith Farnsworth yesterday showed to me her ring, and to be honest, it seemed quite pricey. Well, so maybe those two knew about the wedding, and that's the reason why they are here.
You think they're planning to steal her ring?
Just an idea. Just an idea.
Certainly it'll be their her virginity. So dinner service. So Todd reports back. He's not gone very long at all. And you can see he's got a tray full of drinks, and he accurately gives everyone the drink that they ordered, and all the drinks are immaculate. They taste fantastic. And then he seems to have a bit of a weird look on his face as he addresses Mr. Hurst and says, I'm sorry, sir, but they have not been reassigned. And now we're not quite sure what to make of it. They haven't shown up for work, and they're not they haven't been reassigned. So technically, we don't know where they are.
Doesn't that seem a little alarming?
Well, it isn't unusual for some employees to basically abandon their jobs. It typically happens when we're in port, or it'll typically happen with those workers who are assigned to some of the more menial and lower class assignments. It's rare for it to occur with first class passenger service, but there's a first time for everything, I guess. I mean, they didn't jump overboard, so they're somewhere on the ship, and you know, we'll certainly, prosecute them and demand that that they pay for their voyage instead of us paying them to work since they're not working. But that's nothing that you need to worry about, sir. We will certainly the stewards, the head steward and the steward service. We'll take care of that.
We shall see. Anyway, thank you for your help.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad that I could be of service. If there's anything else I can help you with, please just let me know.
Very good.
And with that, Todd leaves. He goes on to attend more work. So dinner service is over, and it'll be a few more hours before tea time, for the tea service. There's still plenty of daylight and plenty of fun and frolicking amenities available. What would y'all like to do?
So give the skeet shooting a go.
All right. So you sign up, and they tell you that it'll approximately be a couple hours before they get to your name in line.
Don't you know who I am? A couple of hours? It's intolerable.
And the steward apologizes, and he says, I'm so sorry, sir, but we do have a list here.
Okay. Tell him we'll sick Rockefeller on him.
I bet Pulitzer could figure out a way to get his name towards the further up the top of the list.
Okay.
Mr. Hurst, it seems like you were the last person to see those strange fellows.
Was I?
When you said he threw something over the...
Oh, yes. Yes, last night. Well, we're down on C deck then. That's where their cabins are, but apparently they didn't go back to their cabins. So they're obviously not in any of the regular areas of the ship, because they haven't turned up for duty. I'm sure they would have been reported either being not in their area, or if they had been seen, they would have been dealt with. So they're possibly hiding somewhere.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you saw only one of them.
Yes.
Hmm.
Maybe we should have a look in some of the below decks, as it were.
Oh, I'm not going there.
You know, the ship is enormous. We could spend the entire week searching and not find sign of them.
That doesn't sound very appealing, Mr. Hurst.
There's another crazy idea. What if there were two, and now there's only one?
But neither of them turned up for work.
Yeah, because one of them is swimming at the very bottom of the sea.
Yes, dear. Yes, I'm sure that's the explanation.
He said condescendingly.
Yeah. Who has a spell that we can use to inspect the bottom of the boat? We'll check the keel. So,
to be honest, I'm at a bit of a loss. And
okay. So do you guys want to just spend the afternoon enjoying yourselves with the amenities of A and B deck?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I think Miss Morgan would ask Miss Kennedy if she would like to go play some bridge.
I might pop down to the presumably there's a ship's hospital or a ship's sick bay.
And there's an infirmary.
Infirmary. I'll poke my head in there just on the off chance that they're there.
Okay. All right. And the infirmary is also on B deck.
Okay.
So Morgan and Kennedy are going to go play cards if Kennedy agrees.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Why not?
And then Vanderbilt is going to go and check out the infirmary. Rockefeller and Hurst. Oh, Hurst, you were going to wait for skeet shooting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It'll be a couple hours, but it should probably go pretty quickly.
I am going to be disgusted at how everyone seems to have suddenly lost interest after. So suddenly.
It's those liquid lunches.
It's the fickleness. It's the fickleness of being rich.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll wander the deck smoking for a while.
Okay. All right. So as you guys go about your own individual things and you're kind of separating your ways, the ladies are in the lounge room playing cards, and you guys do notice eventually Mrs. Oosterman, Widow Oosterman, comes into the lounge, and she just kind of, you know, sits at a table by herself near, you know, across the room near a window. And so she's just kind of chilling out over there. Okay.
Just sitting there, not reading or doing anything, just kind of like staring out the window.
I mean, yeah, there's newspapers available, magazines and stuff like that. And so she's got one that she kind of flicks through every now and then. But she's just basically just kind of, you know, chilling out.
Okay.
Look, Felicity, look who's there. Why don't we go and talk to her?
Yes, why don't we? Why don't we? Why don't we let her get settled in for a few minutes, and then once she's comfortable, we'll go and engage her in some conversation.
Yeah, I wish Richard was here so he could punch her on the face.
Oh, Catherine, you are too much. You are too much. So we'll wait a few minutes, let her get settled in, and then amble on over there.
Okay. So as you guys are waiting, Mrs. Dodd actually also comes in, and Mrs. Dodd walks across the room, and you can't really hear the conversation, but you can see that she's trying to engage the Widow Oosterman, and it seems to be pretty much a one-sided conversation. You know, Dodd is talking to Oosterman, and then Oosterman finally stands up, and you can see that she leans in close and says something to Dodd, and Dodd just kind of has a look of shock, and Oosterman storms out.
We would, or at least Miss Morgan would immediately go over to Miss Dodd and see what is wrong, what happened.
So Oosterman leaves. Dodd is still there. weeping when you come up and talk to her. And she goes, "Oh, forgive me. I'm so sorry. I'm just being silly."
Oh, so that looked like Miss.
Are you okay? Do you want some water?
Yes, please.
Call the steward if you want a drink or some. I will call up the steward and ask for water.
Yes, thank you. Water would be wonderful.
Well, water and some tissues for the lady.
And the steward is quick to oblige, and he runs off to get everything.
So go ahead.
And so, Dodd is weeping there with you.
Miss Dodd, please, just calm down. It'll be all right. It looked like Miss Osterman was quite angry or upset. Is everything all right?
I don't understand what's going on. I don't understand. It's like she doesn't even know who I am. I don't know. It's very frustrating.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I keep trying to engage her and you know, we're close friends. I mean, we've been on vacations. We've hung, we've traveled the world and just, we've seen Paris together. And it's like she doesn't even know who I am. And it's, I don't know what's going on. Joanna Osterman I remember.
And she say something to you?
That gives her pause. She stops and she goes, I can't say.
So she obviously was not like this the last time you saw her. When was the last time you saw her?
Well, it's been a couple of years. I mean, we get together, when traveling, that kind of thing. We travel in the same circles, and whenever one of us is going to make a European trip, we tend to try and bring the other along just for the company. But I wasn't able to reach her before this voyage. I was quite surprised to see her on board.
And do you know where she last was or where she was residing?
She was in New York, right?
Yes, so, Park Avenue.
Do you know what was she doing there?
Well, her apartment is in Park Avenue.
Oh, she lives there.
Quite strange. Quite strange indeed.
Both of you... I mean, you don't even need a role for this. Both of you feel like there's still something, deeply disturbing, Mrs. Dodd.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm assuming the steward comes back with the water and the...
Yes.
Everything. Yep. Yes. And we'll keep consoling her for the time being and until we'll say, "Oh, Miss Dodd, why don't we go outside and walk the promenade and get some fresh air?"
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And so you guys head out there and the sun is low in the sky, but it's not, still, more than an hour, a couple hours really away from setting. By now, Hurst, your name is called and you're ready for some skeet shooting.
Excellent.
Have you got the
skill is going to come in handy? Oh, it's a shotgun skill, is it?
Okay. Yes. Yes. Do you have the shotgun skill?
I have the base.
Fantastic.
Turn around and I shoot Rockefeller.
give me four shotgun rolls.
Failure. 99. And failure.
These clay pigeons don't know who you are.
Clearly.
I think I've got a dodgy shotgun.
they've engineered it to where it's practically foolproof. So no one can get hurt. So even your 99 is okay. Of course, the malfunction on the weapon itself is 100. So if you had rolled a 100, then the weapon would have malfunctioned. But so you haven't injured anyone, and you did not injure the
pride.
Except for your pride. Yes, only your pride was hurt, not the weapon itself, and no observers.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you came up a big goose egg. In fact, only 1 in 5 people ever completely miss. So you have that distinction.
Lose 1d6 sanity.
Shooting as well as ever, I see, Hurst. Excellent work.
Rockefeller, why don't you have a go?
Oh, I would not want to step in front of the line.
Is there much of a line left at this time?
You know what? Not at this hour. If Rockefeller wants to go, he can go.
I insist.
Well, certainly, certainly.
Probably going to do better, damn it.
Probably.
Let's see now. Which end goes where? Sorry, how many did you say, John? 5?
4.
4. I made 1.
Oh, well, all right.
Darn it.
Bam, one of the clay pigeons does explode.
Ah, there we go. Nothing to it, Hurst.
And both of you guys, not quite yet, but both of you guys do see the ladies escorting Mrs. Dodd.
Oh.
And Vanderbilt, where are you at this time?
I had gone down to the sick bay to...
that's right.
Or
right.
To the infirmary to see if there was any sign of the stewards there, but presumably right. Not, so...
Right. Yeah, actually, so you get down to the infirmary and yeah, it's pretty empty. There's no one that's been needing any immediate medical attention.
Okay.
So going back up, yeah, Rockefeller and Hurst, you guys see Morgan and Kennedy escorting Mrs. Dodd as they kind of, they're getting some air and they just kind of go over to one of the railings and are looking out at the ocean horizon and just enjoying the sky.
I wanted to ask you, did we lose sight of Osterman?
You did. Yes, she left.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to try and leave Dodd behind and follow Osterman.
Yeah, that's what I will. Excuse me, I'll be right back. Okay, I'll see you down on the deck. I will walk away.
Okay.
I will stay.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, so you do see Osterman heading down one of the corridors, presumably to her cabin.
Okay, I'll follow her very slowly behind.
Do you have stealth?
No, I don't.
Well, roll it anyways at base.
92.
Fantastic. So actually, as you're walking and you look around a corner to see what progress that Osterman is making, she's stopped. She's turned around and she's waiting and is looking right at you. Oh, no.
I wave.
And you wave.
And a smile. Yeah. Hi.
And she says, how can I help you?
Oh, there we go.
Don't you remember me? I saw you the other day with the captain having dinner. How are you doing? My name is Catherine Kennedy.
I do not know who you are. Please leave me alone. Oh. And she turns around to leave.
So I will pretend to be shocked for a minute. I will pretend to be shocked for a minute and then, continue following her. Casually. Now, I would like to roll a psychology. So let me roll. And that's a pass. Basically, how old is she, you said?
Osterman is, I can tell you, she is, where is she? She looks to be in her early 60s, you're assuming. She doesn't have a little tag on her neck that says how old she is.
Mm-hmm. No, I know. But, she looks older.
Yeah.
So I wanted to notice the way she addressed me. You know, she should know who I am if she's from New York.
You know what? Yes, she should.
So, is she kind of looking forgetful, or did I notice something in her behavior other than being rude?
The only thing that you noticed besides the rudeness was the steel edge directness of, why are you following me? I don't know who you are. Leave me alone. Mm-hmm. She doesn't seem confused or you know.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to know. So here's the thing. She's if she's from New York, Park Avenue, she should know who I am. And also, that's not a accepted behavior from someone, you know, her class, I would say.
Correct.
So, yeah, I will continue following her casually, pretending that I'm going in the same direction. And if she if she looks back to me again, I will just turn my head in disgust.
Okay. So she makes it all the way to her cabin.
Okay.
So you see her going into her cabin.
Go ahead.
And she sees that you're following her.
Yes. Okay, that's fine. As soon as she goes into her cabin, I will turn around and go back to the others. I will go after Felicity first and then go and look for the other gentleman.
Okay.
While Miss Kennedy is away, I will continue to press Miss Dodd about Miss Osterman.
Okay.
And her history, how she met her, stuff like that, kind of trying to, like, bring back the good memories. You know, let her open up to let me know what she was saying to her that would make her so upset.
She talks about how they met basically after her husband had passed away, and she's basically, you know, New York socialite women, you know, band together in times of tragedy, and so she was just, you know, part of that group, and they've taken, you know, trips together to help just, you know, build up that self-confidence again after the loss of a loved one. You know, they head, and they've been chair people on different philanthropic or, you know, drives and stuff like that to raise money for this cause, that kind of thing. I mean, it's not like they see each other every day, you know, but they might see each other intensely two or three times per year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So she finally, Mrs. Dodd, finally feels comfortable with you, you know, especially with a fellow woman. And so she finally kind of, you know, starts tearing up again. And she goes, I'm so hurt. Because Joanna, what she said to me, just hurt me so deeply. She said, and she shuddered. She goes, it's so gross. I don't even want to say it, but she whispered to me. She said, "Keep away from me, you prattling cow. You are nothing to me." And that's just terrible. And she starts crying again at the thought of those words and what was said to her.
Wow. And I will just reassure her that that is most certainly not the case. And she's an amazing woman, and to think nothing of it.
And she's just, you know, weeping and weeping, and is so thankful for your support. And she asked, you know, could you help her get back to her room?
Oh, of course, of course. Let me take you. And I will start leading her back to her room.
Okay. So, guys, as you all finished your skeet shooting, You see Kennedy and Dodd talking in close quarters, and then they start to walk away together. And obviously,
Morgan.
Was that Morgan? Oh yeah, Morgan. I'm sorry, Morgan. Morgan and Dodd are talking, and then finally Morgan helps her, and they start to walk away. And by this time, Augustus Vanderbilt shows up just to bring him back into the fold.
Well, no luck down at the sick bay. You know, Rockefeller, it occurs to me, when you were having that little contretemps with the steward and Miss Osterman outside her cabin, you didn't happen to notice any odd or unpleasant smells about her, did you?
And you did not.
What is the connection between this woman and those two stewards? Why are they all three so evasive?
Well, thank you for restating the question that has been bothering us all day. That's
Yes, master of the obvious. That's me.
Just now catching up to that, are you?
Yes.
Let me know when I catch up with them, John.
Okay, you catch up now.
Okay,
so everyone is here except for Morgan.
Kind of come in a hurry. Oh, you have no idea what just happened. I was following this Miss Osterman. She was so rude to me, you know, saying, I don't know you, leave me alone. But there was something really strange in the way she said it. And Miss Dodd, she was saying that it's like she doesn't know who she is. And they were really close friends. So, Richard, I believe you were right. We should find out what is happening with that woman. Because it's not like, you know, my cousin's auntie that went a little bit crazy and forget everyone else. It's different. It's the way she looked at me is, I don't know, very confrontative.
Well, one thing we could try is wait outside her cabin until we know she is out of it. For a fact, we've seen her leave her cabin. And then try to gain access to it.
Yes, those doors aren't particularly strong.
Yes, I was just thinking about that. But perhaps that is not the best course of action. If we could get our hands on the keys to a set of stewards' keys to the cabins, perhaps we could gain access in a slightly less visible way.
I'm sure Mr. Hurst would have no problem in obtaining such a thing.
Would everyone please give me a spot hidden?
Except for Morgan, correct?
Nope. Except for Morgan.
Failure.
03 success.
94.
46. That's a failure.
All right, so George Hurst.
Yes.
As the group of you guys are talking, okay, you know, you guys are out on the deck. My assumption is that y'all are out on deck, but there's like a corridor entrance to go into the hallways where cabins and stuff are nearby, and movement over there caught your eye. And there's movement going on all around, but I don't know. You know, something caught your eye. You go, you turn slightly and look, and you see Osterman kind of peeking around a corner, looking at you guys. Okay.
She's too far away to hear us, though. I take it
too far away to hear you guys, but she's like spying on you. Oh, I rolled a 01. So. The two of you guys locked eyes. Like, it's obvious you saw her and she saw you, and she ducked away. You're the only one that saw that, though.
I will mention, say, I can't say turn around now, but we seem to have attracted the attention of Mrs. Osterman. She was just spying on us.
Well, then let's go confront her now and get this over with.
Morgan, give me a luck roll.
All right, let's see here. That's a fail with an 80.
Okay. All right, so you are coming back from Mrs. Dodd's cabin, and so now you see the Scooby gang as they're kind of like coming towards you.
So, oh, well, hello, everyone. I just escorted a quite frazzled Miss Dodd back to her room. Miss Osterman was quite rude to her. There's something very strange going on with her. She seems to not even know the woman, and they've been friends for years.
How do we lure this woman out of her room?
She's out of her room right now. Mr. Hurst just saw her.
Oh, you but did. We don't know where she is right now. Maybe she went back into her room.
Let's try and follow her. So, you know, I agree with Richard's suggestion. Let's head in that direction.
Well, I said that when you saw her.
No, I assume that's what we had been doing. We had been moving in that direction.
Yes, you were heading in that direction, and then before you know were able to make deep pursuit, you just ran into Morgan. Morgan's luck roll, though, was to see if she was going to be returning to you guys from the same hallway that Osterman was in, and then Morgan would have run into her first, but her luck failed, so she came in a different direction.
So is the hallway where she went the same one that, you know, takes her to back to her room?
Well, all roads lead to Rome, so if she was to take this hallway, it would eventually lead back to her room, but it's certainly not the most direct route.
Okay, maybe she was going to see the other two stewards. We should follow her, and a couple of us should go to her room and search it.
Okay.
That sounds like a job for Rockefeller and Hearst, the dynamic duo. Well, the rest of us could.
This is exciting.
Talk to the stewards.
All right, so who's going to do what?
Well, can we see Osterman?
No, I'm going to need someone to hustle down a hallway and give me a luck roll. You might need to go in multiple directions because you're just not sure where she went.
Okay.
I passed my luck roll with a 0-1.
Oh. Ooh. All right. You actually see her. You know, you got to a place where you're able to see the main grand staircase in front of the dining room. Just behind the grand staircase is the lift, is the elevator, and so she's pulling close the gate and asking the lift operator to obviously take her down since she's as far up as it will go.
Okay, I will scurry to try to get close enough to hear what floor or what level she asks for.
You can't hear, but there is an indicator with an arm, and it's slowly ticking downward, showing the current location of the lift. And so it's yes.
Her go ahead. Cabin would be on this deck.
Her cabin is on A deck. Yes.
Okay. So I will just say
it's empty now.
Augustus, why don't you come with me and Felicity and go to her room. And we let Richard and George go after her.
Yes, that sounds like a smashing idea, Catherine.
Richard, punch one of those stewards for me on the face.
I'm about to punch Miss Kennedy in the face.
That really would cement your reputation. So where did the lift stop?
So as Richard watches, the arm pings on that thing all the way to the bottom. So it goes down. It goes all the way down to E deck.
There's an E deck.
Yes, that is steerage.
Yes, in epsilon. Lift goes down.
Goodness. Well, I'm up for going down there.
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, fine. I'm going to go down there.
Oh. Well, enjoy.
Okay. So, you know, the arm is down there, you know, showing that the lift is on the deck for, you know, a minute or two. And then finally it starts returning up, 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 up. And then it finally comes all the way back to A deck.
Okay.
And it only has the operator on the inside.
I will ask them to take me down.
He says, certainly, sir. Who wants to get in the elevator and head down?
Come on, Richard.
Oh, I'll go.
Okay. So we have Augustus and George. They're going to get in the elevator and head on down?
Oh, this is ridiculous. And I'll go with them.
All right. So,
that's the
so,
spirit, Richard.
We're splitting along gender lines. All right. Fantastic. Okay. So the men get into the elevator, and the elevator is, and you guys tell the lift operator to take you down to E deck. And he says, right away, sir. And he closes the door and starts bringing y'all down to E deck. Ladies, you are outside of Joanna Osterman's cabin. The door is shut. Door is shut and locked.
Well, Catherine, what do you propose we do now? Shall we call another steward?
That's what I was thinking. You call steward, you tell him this is your room, and you cannot enter, so he should open it for you.
Yes, well, we might have to find a steward from a different cabin area, as I'm sure the stewards in this area know this is Miss Osterman's room, especially with the ruckus Mr. Rockefeller caused earlier.
Good thinking. And so we go, looking for a steward.
Now, actually, John, are there windows on the outsides of these A-deck units?
Yes, there are.
Well, Miss Kennedy, why don't we go around and check the window?
Well, let's give it a try.
Very well. We'll head around and check the window. Now, is that out facing the promenade on that level?
She come in?
Well, yeah, there's a walkway. So, I mean, there'll be a walkway right by the railing where her window overlooks. So it won't be the promenade itself. It'll just be a walkway.
Okay. And how big is the window?
I mean, it's a good enough size. It certainly, you ladies will be able to fit through if you so desire.
All right. We'll look around and see if anybody's looking or anybody that could see us.
Yeah. Okay.
And if not, I will check to see if the window is unlocked.
The window is unlocked.
Oh, this is exciting, Felicity. Go now.
give me a dex times 5 to make it in the window, and then give me a luck roll. Actually, y'all's group luck roll is, let's see, 55.
65, 80. Right?
No, I have to recalculate for you guys.
I've got 80.
Oh, right. Like, with the new rules. Awesome.
So it's like 72 and a half? Do you want me to roll 75? 60, or?
Yeah, it's 67. So roll for 67.
And then I will roll my dex times 5 to try and get in the window.
Okay.
13.
That's a success with a 40.
And it sounds like the luck roll was successful?
13, yes.
All right. So you are able to get in when nobody is looking.
Perfect.
You are inside Miss Osterman's cabin.
And what does Miss Morgan see?
So you're looking around. Are you leaving Kennedy outside?
No, I will come in and say, hurry, hurry, Catherine.
I will jump in and try to get him.
Get in through the window?
Well, open the door. I will go to the door.
Yes.
Okay.
And all I will hold to the door.
Perfect. No problems there. All right. So you're able to open the door and she gets in, no problems.
And then lock it behind us.
Okay. Okay. So, as you look around the room, you know, these are suites. So there's like a living room area and a bedroom with an attached bathroom. And so the living room area is pretty plain. It's got, you know, the furniture that comes with the ship in there. And it looks like there's one small, like, an attaché case. And then in the bedroom is one suitcase.
Let's open it.
Yeah.
So the suitcase inside has a single hat and a large coat. This one is a fur trimmed, but it's a very large coat, and there's one large fancy lady's hat.
Very strange, packed exactly like the other two.
What's up with Miss Osterman? Do we see any other dresses? At this point, we have seen her like three times already, you know, in different days. So
is she always wearing the same thing?
No, yeah? She's not always wearing the same thing, but give me an idea roll.
Okay. 03.
Success.
Her clothing is different, but her hair and makeup is exactly the same every day. Not kind of the same. I mean exactly the same to the letter of the law. Her hair and makeup is exactly the same.
Oh.
Now, her clothing looks different, but you would say that all of the clothing that she's worn looks to be different variations on a theme. There's not a whole lot of variety, but certainly colors and patterns and maybe some trim is different every now and then. But there you have it.
Okay.
Stranger, Miss Kennedy.
You think she's wearing a mask?
I don't rightly know. This sounds so strange.
I wear a mask.
There's got to be something else here.
Why don't we check the attaché case?
Mm-hmm.
You were saying there was another case in the
living room.
Yep. The sitting room.
The sitting room. So inside the attaché are three small vials. So two of the vials have an iridescent, almost a luminous blue liquid inside. But the third vial, it has a clear liquid that when you shake it around and stuff, you just kind of roll the liquid around on the inside, it leaves a little bit of an oily residue in its wake on the inside of the bottle. So there's like an oily clear liquid, and then there's a iridescent blue liquid.
Miss Kennedy appears she's on some sort of drugs.
Oh, or witchcraft. I will open one of the bottles and smell it.
Okay, do you open a blue or a clear?
Miss Morgan will stand back as Miss Kennedy is doing this.
as her head explodes.
I will open the blue one.
Okay. No odor.
Okay, I close it and I will grab the other one then. Do the same.
Okay, no odor.
Drink it.
So I'm going to tell, I will turn to Felicity and tell her, you know what? We should take them away with us.
Yes, I think we should take them and at least away from her, maybe to the authorities. This seems highly illegal.
Yes, let's hide them first.
Quite untoward.
I will say let's hide them first in one of our rooms and let's see what she has to say to the captain about this.
Yes, maybe.
And see
maybe
how she behaves.
Maybe this will make her react differently or... yes.
It's exactly my thinking.
And with that, I think we will take the attaché case.
No, just the vials. Just the vials. The vials. At least. Okay. Yes.
All right.
They're small. You could fit all three, you know, in your hand and close your hand almost. You can almost get your fingers closed around all three of them. I mean, they're just clustered together in your hand. They're small vials.
Okay. Is there a peephole on the door to the hallway?
Yes.
We'll take a look out, kind of see if there's anyone around, and then disperse.
Well, there's no one standing directly in front of the door.
All right. I will tell, Miss Kennedy, Catherine, why don't you wait behind? I will go out, and if there's anyone in the hallway, I will knock and then intercept.
Give me a group luck roll, so 67.
36.
All right, you open the door to the hallway, and it is vacant.
Say, quick, Catherine, there's no one out here.
Go, let's go.
All right.
I will hurry out of the room, and you know what? Just before, well, she was actually outside, I will get my my dress and kind of clean everything so we didn't leave any sort of fingerprints or anything like that. I know it is not that important, you know, at this point in time, but I'll still do it.
Because you read a lot of Agatha Christie.
Exactly.
All right. So
Sherlock Holmes and whatnot.
Exactly. Our cat burglars have made their escape. So, gentlemen, the lift comes down to E-Deck, and the lift operator opens the door and says, E-Deck.
Okay. What do we see?
A plain white hallway. And this far below the below deck, you can really hear the thrumming of the engines, just kind of echoing through. It's almost like a heartbeat.
This is your party, as they say.
Are these cabins around here, or just?
Nope. This is all like work area. So, you know, you can see engineering one direction, and then there's signage, you know, that so it says engineering, and then the other sign says cargo.
You're going to open a nearby door and look inside.
Well, the signage is pointing cargo that way, engineering that way.
Can I ask something of the steward before the elevator disappears?
Sure.
Did you really just bring Mrs. Osterman down here?
Yes, sir.
Did she say why she would be coming down here?
No, sir.
That'll be remarkable.
Did you see where she went?
I believe she headed in the direction of cargo. Oh, she may be checking on some of her belongings.
Oh, I don't doubt it, yes. Let's go and meet up with our good friend, Mrs. Osterman.
Very good, sir.
We're heading in the direction of cargo.
All right. So as you all head down the corridor, you know, there's, you know, engineering stuff every now and then. And then you do see a door for cargo.
Have a look inside.
Okay. This door opens up into what is a very large room. These cargo bays, I mean, you're still above the waterline. So you're not below the waterline of the ship. And so when these ships are in dock, there's side doors that open up on the side of the ship. And so cargo is driven and trucked, you know, with hand trucks and whatnot, or even cars can be driven in into the special side doors. And then they close those up and everything. So it's not like you have to have top deck access, you know. So you see all kinds of things, you know. They've neatly stacked and strapped down all kinds of crates and pallets of luggage. And you can see there's industrial things that are being shipped across the ocean. I mean, you know, the ship makes good money, you know, selling cargo space, you know, to move goods across the ocean as well. You know, there's giant crates of mail, you know, for international mail. You can see that there's a ton of cars that are lined up and parked super close together, you know, to form a parking lot over in one corner of the cargo hold. And you just, you know, again, just crates of luggage and stuff, you know, steamer trunks and whatnot. It's a very large room filled with a ton of stuff.
I'm looking for the evil cultist ceremony.
Ah, evil cultist ceremony. Very good. So you want to just kind of start sneaking around down here?
Yes.
All right. And that's what Hearst wants to do, Rockefeller and Vanderbilt.
Hearst is the expert. I'm following his lead.
Okay. Are you going with him, or is he going to have a pretty good lead?
No, I'm going with him.
Okay.
Only I'm not really going to try to sneak. I'm just following him.
Okay. Yeah, likewise.
Okay. So not putting a lot of effort into being stealthy?
No.
All right.
I'm seriously debating just calling out. This is Osterman. Are you in here?
Okay. So I need you guys to, I'm going to just use, what is for each of your characters, what is the better skill, listen or spot hidden?
For me, it's listen.
Okay.
Let's see, base or base?
I have a 40 in listen. So yeah, that would be better than.
Because neither of these is visual or audible, but I just want you to pick whichever of those two skills is the better and roll it, and we'll use it for this other sense.
Okay. I'll roll against listen then.
It's a success for listen.
Success 07.
Okay.
I failed by one.
All right. The two successes, again, I didn't care whether you're trying to use spot hidden or listen, because actually neither of them are applicable, but it's your sense of smell that comes into play. So the two of you that were successful, you guys smell something really funky, like really musky.
Okay.
And it's coming from you know, it's, you know, the Vanderbilt, you had a critical success, right? Like you rolled a 06 or something?
07, not quite a critical, but close.
Oh, okay. So what's your skill?
40.
Okay. Well, that's critical. 20% would be 8.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep. So you rolled 20%, right? 1/5 of that skill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're sure that the odor is coming from that direction there, which is where all the cars are parked.
Gentlemen, are you getting this smell? Can you detect that reek?
Yes,
it seems to be strong from the direction of those vehicles.
Okay.
I start edging sort of in a peripheral way, around the not going directly at the vehicles, but sort of circumnavigating that section of the cargo area, so I can kind of get a look, a general look.
Okay, so you're taking the lead now?
Sure, if no one else objects.
Just need to know who's first. All right, so you're taking the lead, and you're heading out to try and scout around, right? Okay. So Vanderbilt's taking kind of like a flanking direction around. What do you guys want
to
do?
I'm going to follow him because he seems to have found something interesting.
All right, so you're following Vanderbilt's lead, Rockefeller?
Yep, same thing.
All right. So Vanderbilt's first. We got Hearst second, and Rockefeller's third. So as you're going around, Vanderbilt, this time do try and give me a spot hidden.
Okay. That will be base. 75, fail.
Okay. So you're kind of coming around and you know that they're over there somewhere. At least you know something is over there from the smell, but you just can't quite figure it out. You just don't know what's over there. So hold on just for a second, if you would. Okay, I need to look something up just for a second, if you don't mind. Hold on. Sorry for this delay. Uh,
It's always good to double check
the damage for the landmine.
It's always good to double check and make sure you get the right sanity loss. You don't want to.
Oh yes, exactly, exactly.
Don't want to muck that up.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess really. I'm going to make a call here then and say that. Okay. All right, so I'm going to... Whoa! Drop my die. Yeah! Okay. So now let me eat this. Vanderbilt.
Yes.
So you're leading this group of guys, and y'all are edging in between a couple of vehicles, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to come around, and as you do so, you feel a raking pain as something slashes across your chest. And your clothing tears and your skin opens and you start to bleed from some sort of deep cut that has just occurred across your chest. Take 4 points of damage.
Ah!
And you do exactly that. You cry out in pain quite loudly. Everyone, without having to make rolls, you start hearing feet running around. Shoes. You hear shoes people are running around trying to do something.
Can I see what's happening?
Hello, who's there?
Well, you guys are kind of tight in. You're in between cars. You're in a funnel. Hurst, you're actually kind of well protected because you got, you know, not only are you right in between two cars, but you've got Rockefeller behind you. You've got Vanderbilt ahead of you. So if anything's going to happen, that's probably going to happen to them first. You're kind of protected in the middle. Something's happening now.
I call out. Hello. Who's there?
No one calls back out to you.
And I didn't see what raked me across the chest.
No. No. Oh. Your clothing and your flesh just kind of just split open as something slashed across you, and it hurt like hell.
Look around in the direction of where the feet sounds are coming from.
It sounds like it could be behind you. Give me a spot hidden.
You're kidding, right?
Is that everyone or just?
Just Rockefeller looking behind me. Hurst, your vision is totally obscured by the cars around you and the people in front of you. You just, I mean, unless you're looking straight up, you can't see shit. And Rockefeller doesn't see anything. Vanderbilt, you give me another spot hidden.
Oh, I'm sorry. Another spot hidden?
Yes.
76, fail.
All right. You're in here like a trapped rat. And you feel more pain as it seems like something just literally stabbed deep into your chest. And you have a hard time breathing now as you take another 2 points of damage. Give me a sand roll.
36, that is a success.
Okay. You lose no sand, but you are scared shitless to be, you know, the guys behind you, Hurst and Rockefeller, they are obviously blocking your escape because you're getting stabbed. And, you know, first one was a slash, like a cutting, and the second one was like a stabbing. And again, no visibility. You don't see anything that's happening. You're just being cut up. Rockefeller, hold on just for a second. You didn't see anything either. Let's see. Sorry. That's not what I want. Oh, that is what I want. Okay. Rockefeller, you failed your sand. You failed your spot hidden.
Yeah.
No, that's not going to work. I'm not just going to do that. That's silly. Yeah, okay. Yeah, what do you guys want to do? There's people around here. Obviously, you hear them, but you can't see them. And Vanderbilt's been stabbed a couple of times.
I think it's time to start yelling out, help.
All right, so y'all just start shouting, help, 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 help.
So when we like look around, I mean, they're just cars. It's not like we can't look over them. There's no way.
Well, I mean, they're not, you know, they're not low cars, you know, the, you know, Model Ts and stuff. They had those really tall bodies and stuff. And you know, the windows aren't, you know, perfect clear glass. I mean, you know, it's an obstruction. It's an obstruction. And especially when you got row after car and they're not all perfectly aligned, you might see through the window of one car, but you're looking at the body of another car on the opposite side.
And then I shall kneel down and look under them.
Okay. So you kneel down, you look under, and give me a spot hidden at double.
Nope, still can't do it.
Somebody is nearby. You just can't. You're not looking in the right spot.
I think I'm disconcerted and alarmed and shocked enough to start shouting for help.
Okay. So you guys are screaming and shouting for help, and you're hoping that your voices can be heard over the constant thrumming of the engines that are filling the air. The heartbeat of the ship is thrumming throughout. So, Hurst, what are you going to do? Rockefeller's kneeling on the ground. He's sticking his head down to look underneath the cars.
Can I see what's happening to Vanderbilt?
Yeah, I mean, you see blood, you know. Vanderbilt's bleeding.
Can I just try to drag him out the way and go back the way we came?
Okay, so you want to step over Rockefeller? I mean, he's a big guy. He's kind of in the way there.
No, if I see him trying to do that, I'm gonna help him.
Okay, you want to help Hurst get Vanderbilt out?
Yep.
Okay, so as you guys are, and Vanderbilt, are you, I mean, you've taken 6 points of damage. I don't know how many hit points you have.
I had 14.
Okay.
So I'm down to 8.
All right. So you've taken a pretty good amount, though.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not completely incapacitated. But certainly, you've never experienced anything like this where you're just being cut up and stabbed with obviously imagination, I guess, right?
Well, yeah.
So as they tried to help you, Hurst, you actually see, you're not even sure where she came from, but Mrs. Osterman is now standing right behind Rockefeller. As Rockefeller is looking at you guys to try and help Vanderbilt, you look back, and there's Osterman, and she reaches up to try and grab at Rockefeller's hair. No.
Oh, well, worth a try.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what that typing was.
So she is physically grappling with Rockefeller?
She's about to. Unless you do anything this round, she is going to try and reach up and grab a handful of hair.
Can I punch her?
At half of your skill because Rockefeller's in the way. He's failed his spot hiddens and stuff. He just didn't realize that she was sneaking up behind him.
Ooh. Success. Just
31
out of 65.
Perfect. You reach right past Rockefeller and you slug her.
What's my damage bonus? +4.
So D3 and a D4.
Just a second, sorry. And the D4. That is a 3 plus 2, 5 points.
Okay. And, you know, you pop her right in the face, and she just goes, and kind of growls at you, you know. And now, Rockefeller, you turn around, and there's Osterman right there behind you.
Okay. I mean, does she look like her normal self? I mean...
Yeah, she looks like Osterman.
Kind of a strange sight to see an old lady growling. Okay. What was that for?
Never met my family, I guess.
She was about to attack you. The whole world's gone insane.
What is your dex, Rockefeller?
14.
And mine is 14 as well. I'll let you go first. She's reaching up with two hands towards your hair.
Towards my hair?
Your hair.
I'm just going to shove her away. I see no reason. She's just some crazy old lady. I see no reason to fight her. I'm just going to try to shove her away. Really now, Mrs. Osterman, what has gotten into you?
Okay. So no damage. You do a push on her. I am going to... try and do a dodge to avoid being pushed. But we'll see how that works. No. So you push her back, and she's just like, she's just kind of growling, you know. But it's old lady growling, you know. She's just like, Vanderbilt, what are you doing?
I'm unaware of what is going on behind me. I'm just stumbling backwards away from whatever is attacking me in front.
Okay, so you have not turned around to see what the other guys are doing. You're still trying to keep your eyes out in the other direction?
Yeah, and trying and like putting my hands up to fend off whatever it is that keeps attacking me from the front.
Okay. Give me a spot hidden. And I'm going to make a roll here.
80. Nope.
Okay. So you're trying to back up and get away, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So you kind of lurch yourself backwards and you're bumping into Hurst. But as you lurch yourself backwards, you see the body of the car next to you. It gets... a deep scratch put on it. Like it was really close to you, but yeah, the body of the car gets this deep, long, straight line scratch out of nowhere. It just happened. Shrink. Give me a sand. In fact, yeah, give me a sand roll for that.
That I failed.
Lose one.
Okay.
And you want to leave. You want to get out of this cargo hold by any means necessary.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to turn. And if I cannot bolt in the direct line back of me, mm-hmm. I'm going to try to scramble into a car. And
you can go over the hood.
Okay, yeah. Then go over the hood of the nearest car and try to get a clear path out of the area.
Okay. Give me a dex times 5. Hurst and Rockefeller, what do you want to do? The old lady's in front of you, and she looks like she wants to charge at you again, Rockefeller.
Really, Mrs. Osterman, what has gotten into you? I'm just going to try to fend her off. Push her away again if she charges me, to put it bluntly. I'm just going to push her away again.
Okay. Hurst, what's your dex and what do you want to do?
I'm sorry. No, 13. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. So, Hurst, you could actually act first if you so desire. Now, Rockefeller is in your way, and you've noticed that Vanderbilt is attempting to start crawling over the hood of the car to get out of here.
I'm so confused. Well, Rockefeller seems to be handling Mrs. Osterman fairly well, so I'm going to try and escape from the room.
By following Vanderbilt?
Yes.
Over the car, or just try and run deeper into the cargo hold and try and find another way out?
Rather not run deeper into the cargo hold.
So you want to start crawling over the car following Vanderbilt?
Yes. Can I maybe crawl the other way, like over the car on the other side?
Okay, if you crawl over the car on the other side, that will definitely be bringing you closer to where that smell was.
That doesn't seem like a good idea. I think I want to get away from the smell.
Okay, so you want to follow Vanderbilt?
Yes.
All right, well, he definitely has to go first. Vanderbilt, what was your dex times 5? Did you make that roll?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. I rolled a 0-1.
Oh, my God. All right. You leap over it. All right. I mean, you're like pummel horse, Olympic, you know, gymnastics getting over the hood of this car. Rockefeller. And so Hurst is going to be following you, but he'll do his dex roll next round. Rockefeller. So you're not going to do anything aggressive offense. You're going to basically take a defense stance against her as she charges at you. So she does charge at you again, hands up, you know, fingers in like claw positions. You know, she's looking to, and they're high. She's like going for your hair. So you give me a dodge versus her attack.
Nope.
Okay. So she gets up into your grill, and you can feel that she's yanked out a small amount of hair from in each hand.
Oh, really, Mrs. Osterman? I'm about to punch her if she keeps this up.
Okay.
Continue the legacy, Rockefeller.
So we'll go into the next combat round. Vanderbilt, you are now on the opposite side of the car, and you can start running away if you so desire.
Oh, yes.
Now, yes, I so desire. You do not have a temporary insanity. So I'm not driving your character, but just in that moment, when you failed the sand roll, it was only 1 point, but you'd been stabbed twice and then suddenly a mysterious cut occurred on the car next to you. You certainly did not feel safe in that one spot that you're in. So Now that you're on the other side of the car, you're free to do whatever you want. You can continue this or you can leave. You can do whatever you want. I just wanted to, you know, motivate you to do something while you were in that spot. Okay.
Oh, I'm motivated to run as quickly as possible in the direction of the lift.
Okay. Okay. So you'll start making your way out that way.
Mm-hmm.
It'll take at least a couple of combat rounds try and thread your way out of here. Hurst, give me a dex times 5 roll to try and get over the hood of this car.
Okay. Success, just.
Okay. As you go over the car, take 5 points of damage. You feel some sort of blade stab you in the ribs.
Ah! What the bloody hell was that?
And how much damage was that for you in relation to the rest of your hit points?
I had 15 to start with, so.
Okay, 1/3. Okay, so yeah, you got stabbed pretty well. Rockefeller, Joanna Osterman retreats. She retreats back to another little spacing between cars, and she starts working her way in between cars, going into the corner of the cargo hold where that smell was.
Really?
And is. There's still a horrific smell over there.
Mr. Hurst, Mr. Vanderbilt, I believe we should get a doctor for... Well, I was about to say we should get a doctor for Mrs. Osterman, but it appears that the two of you need a doctor as well. What has been going on here?
I'm too busy trying to escape to answer these questions.
Exactly. I'm on my way out.
Yeah.
Where are you two going? Seriously. I'll just start walking after them.
Okay. All right. So you're going to start walking your way calmly out?
Well, yeah. I don't. All I see is Mr. Zosterman is gone off her meds. There's nothing. I'm not particularly frightened by anything at the moment.
All right. She is confused. She's not. Yeah, she is not trying to pursue you in any way right now. So if you wish to retreat out of the cargo hold, you may as well. At Vanderbilt and Hearst, you guys are well injured. You're hurt. And,
what happened? So
you're back in the hallway.
Did you fall? Did you cut yourself on some sharp piece of metal?
There is something in that cargo hold. There is something in there.
Yes, we saw Mrs. Osterman in there.
There is something besides for her in there that we cannot see. Look at this.
I just look blankly at him. What are you talking about, Mr.
I show him the puncture wound in my chest.
You scraped yourself on some damaged bit of car, clearly.
Shake my head in disgust and just limp as quickly as I can towards the lift.
Okay. All right, so you make it towards the lift and ring the bell for service, and so you can hear and you see the needle above the door. You see it start coming down from deck B, or from B deck. It starts coming down towards E deck.
I go with him.
Okay.
Completely bemused as to what Mr. Vanderbilt's problem is. Perhaps he's got off his meds too.
Okay. So the lift comes down, and the attendant sees you guys and immediately goes, "Oh my lord, gentlemen, please get in here quickly.
There's some mad, crazy woman down here, and she's stabbing people."
"Yes, could you find it? Could you summon the ship security and perhaps a doctor? It appears Mrs. Osterman has had some kind of mental break."
So the lift operator, you know, closes the gates and he, you know, ratchets the lift controls so it'll go up to B deck. The infirmary and the ship's detective are both located on B deck. So the lift is on its way up, and it is, you know, painfully slow for those people who have been injured. It's, you know, the lift is just taking its sweet ass time, but it only has one speed, you know. So you guys are, you know, the lift is crawling its way up. You know, a bell rings every time it gets to a new level, and so finally it gets to B deck, and the operator, you know, opens up the gates and starts, you know, he grabs Vanderbilt under the arm and starts bodily trying to help him walk and carry him to the infirmary. Now, granted. You know, that may be a bit extreme. I mean, you can still walk and everything, clearly, but still, there's some pretty good cuts. I mean, they're pretty deep, you know.
Well, you got hurt pretty bad. The shock of the experience.
So. And the shock of the experience. You know, Hearst is sitting there trying to put an arm out for assistance from Rockefeller, and he's like, "Yeah, walk, you silly twit." So you guys are making your way from the lift down the hallway, and as soon as y'all get off on B deck, there are other stewards nearby, and they swarm around you guys. And there's two stewards helping Vanderbilt. There's two stewards helping Hearst. There are other stewards who are running ahead to get the infirmary ready. You know, to get the doctor or the doctor and nurse that are on call there to get them ready to receive patients. Rockefeller, are you going to be heading with them, or do you have other plans?
I plan to. No, I'm not going to head to the infirmary with them. I will go find the ship's detective.
Okay, and it is in the same direction. I mean, you would have already known this from previous tours of the ship. The offices are actually right next door to each other. So you're basically heading the same way, but you're going to stop next door.
How convenient.
How convenient, yes. So while you're on your way, Rockefeller, you start to get a little bit of a headache, and then suddenly it's like your vision explodes and you go stone cold blind.
Ah, my eyes. I can't see anything. This happened. And I will, at the shock of that, I would probably fall to my knees.
Okay. You fall to your knees. You are blind.
Someone help me. I can't see.
This is somewhere else. He's not near.
He's near you guys. He's near you guys. He's behind. And other stewards come up and start picking you up, Rockefeller.
Who is it? Who's there?
It's a steward, sir. Is everything all right?
No. I must see the doctor at once. Something has gone wrong with my eyes.
Oh, certainly. Right this way, sir. Right this way. And they start helping you along.
Okay.
So you guys get to the infirmary, and the doctors start patching up the guys who are hurt. Let's see here. We're going to give... each of them received 2 hit points back.
Okay.
As they are patched up and their wounds are addressed quite smartly. Rockefeller is brought in, and the doctors, you know, start looking at his eyes. You know, they're trying to shine light in there and everything. And yeah, I mean,
they're completely nothing. Missing.
They are not missing, but your irises do not react to light sources. They don't constrict or anything. You know, you are just stone cold blind.
Okay. What happened to you, Rockefeller?
I have no idea. As we were walking along the corridor, suddenly it all went dark.
Give me a sand roll.
That I can pass.
Okay, you lose none. You're made of sterner stuff.
I'm carrying on in a loud voice about creatures in the some kind of wild animals or creatures in the hold, and insisting that the ship's crew mount an armed excursion down into the hold with a group of men. So look at this. Look at this. I'm pointing at the slash marks on my ripped shirt and chest. That there's something wild down there. There's some kind of creature down there.
And so the stewards go, yes, sir, we'll check it out, sir. And so all the stewards that brought you guys to the infirmary leave. And you guys are in the infirmary. Being patched up, except for Rockefeller, who is now blind.
Out of game question, real quick.
Yes. Yes.
How much longer are we going to go tonight? Do you think?
I thought the confrontation was going to be fatal down there. Not being fatal. So you guys could clearly continue on. It's up to you guys. So do you guys want to continue to play for a little while? I don't really have a sense now. I don't have a sense of how much longer this scenario would go.
Maybe we can go for another session.
I mean, I would be up for it if you guys are up for it. Jonathan, would that be rough on your system? I do greatly appreciate you getting up at the ungodly hour of 3 a.m. to come play.
I think if we were to continue, it would probably take its toll.
I mean, what would be better for you? Would another gaming session tomorrow night or any night, whatever night would work best, or would staying for another 30 minutes? I mean, what would be best for you, Jonathan?
I can stay for another 30 minutes, no problem.
Okay. Can everybody else stay for 30 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to get up to go to work in the morning, too. So
I'm good with 30 more minutes.
Yeah, okay. No problem.
All All right. Okay. Let's try and push it for 30 more minutes and then see what happens.
Bum, bum, bum.
Dum, dum, dum. This is one of the downfalls of having a sandbox scenario is, nothing is, really that overly deeply scripted. So it's kind of up to you guys to try and push different things. So
should have killed us when you had the chance.
I should have killed you when I had the chance, but I was trying to keep it on the up and up. So I didn't want a GM Fiat. Y'all's game.
Would it be
you're dead.
So when I was down in the cargo hold, I asked John if I had my pistol on me, to which he replied no. But is it too unreasonable to think I would have such a thing in my cabin?
No, it's in your cabin. It's okay. In your cabin, for sure.
I know where I'm going. I'm going to my cabin.
Okay.
Once I've been patched up.
You are patched up. Yes, you are well patched up, as is Vanderbilt. Rockefeller, what do you want to do with your? I mean, you are blind.
Oh, I'm doing whatever the doctor tells me to.
he tells you to lay down and rest. He wants to draw some blood and run some tests.
And that's what I'm doing.
Okay, ladies. So you guys left, and you've got these vials. So what did you guys want to do with those vials?
I say to Miss Kennedy that we should take these to the ship detective and explain how Miss Osterman has been acting strangely as of late, and we went by to see how she was doing, and her door was open, and this case was open in her living room. We found these strange chemicals. Thought maybe this could be the reason why she'd been acting so different as of late.
Okay.
All we want to do is help, you see?
Okay. All right.
Presumably after we gave her this, we gave the ship's detective the story of Mrs. Osterman attacking us.
Well, it's before. Okay. So there, you guys are with and meeting with the ship's detective, and his name is McDonald. And he's like, "Oh, well, this is that's very unusual. Was there any sign of foul play or evidence? Maybe I should come down and take a look at her room and see if everything's see what's going on here." And so you and he's holding the vials. I'm assuming since you gave them to him, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'll give her only two. I'll keep one of the blue.
Yeah, one of the blue and one of the clear.
So there was only one clear, right. and there were two blue. So right. what do you give to the ship's detective?
The clear and one of the
blue. Just a blue one.
Only a blue or a blue and a clear?
No, only a blue.
Only a blue.
Yeah.
All right. So you're holding on. You're holding onto a blue and you're holding onto a clear.
I say only the blue. Yeah. So we can keep one of each.
Yeah. So one blue. Yeah. Okay. So he's holding this blue vial, and he looks at it and he goes, "So you ladies went into her room, saw she wasn't there, saw this bottle of medicine, and decided to bring it to me?"
Yes, it seems strange, and maybe, since you were right next to the infirmary, maybe one of the doctors could see if maybe there's something wrong with her medication, or I don't know.
He was lying on the floor. The door was open. And the vial was lying on the floor. That's when we pick it up. So that's when we realized that something was wrong.
Okay. So as you're talking to the ship's detective, you guys hear a commotion outside. As you look out the door, you can see a gaggle of stewards. Come running in, and then more stewards are coming, and they're bringing in tow all three guys. They've got Vanderbilt first, they've got Hearst second, and then Rockefeller third. Vanderbilt and Hearst are leaving a trail of blood, and each of them are. And Rockefeller is just being led slowly by one person.
Oh my gosh! I would say
we
would run to their side and ask if they need any help.
Okay.
And what happened? So, what happened?
And so you get the story about the assault. We'll just fast track that. You get the story about the assault. And so now
I knew it. That woman is mad.
All right. So
see, detective.
The detective goes in the cargo hold. Hey, all right. So he goes back in. He has a pistol with him, and he says, "Ladies, stay here." And the detective leaves to go to the lift.
Have I obtained my pistol at this point?
Yes, you've got your pistol, and Vanderbilt, you're patched up. You're sore, but patched up. And the ladies, so the four of you guys are together, and poor blind Rockefeller is lying in the infirmary.
Soul survivor.
I'm gonna follow survivor. The detective.
So you follow the detective? Okay.
Yes.
He's already left ahead of you.
So the
lift is going. Already... Yeah, the lift is already on its way down.
Oh, wait.
Shit.
Let's go, Augustus.
Yes, boys, let's not miss all the fun.
Say, gentlemen, I insist that you go to the ship's locker and break out some of those shotguns. You're going to need them. When you go down there, you are going to need some kind of firearm.
There's only two shotguns that the ship owns and operates, and both of them are currently at the stern end of B deck, under the watchful care of the stewards that are managing the skeet shooting.
Well, get them from them. Before you go down there, you have to have some kind of weapon in hand.
So who are you telling this to?
Hurst any goes, one of the any Hurst one says, of the stewards who are, looks like they're reasonably, reasonably.
The stewards. The
yes,
stewards,
that's the word.
The stewards say, sir, I totally understand that you've had quite the fright. Please, can we escort you back to your room? would you like a drink? Can we get you a drink?
Oh, I'd like a drink, all right. But that's hardly the matter at hand. The matter at hand is keeping yourself alive or whoever goes down to look into the hold. Well,
absolutely.
They can't go down empty-handed.
No, absolutely. We totally agree. Why don't we get you to your room and then we can see to it.
I don't want to go to my room, damn it.
Please, sir, please come with us.
I struggle with them. I try to avoid being hauled off.
Okay, give me a grapple roll.
Okay. Um, 29.
All right. Yeah, they try and grab your arms, but you kind of flail and break away. What about
teach them?
Felicity and I think Catherine Kennedy just dropped off.
Yeah, he'll be back.
Okay, Felicity, what are you gonna do?
I would say after the small altercation with Mr. Vanderbilt, that I would step up between him and the stewards and say, "Please, gentlemen, just." Leave us be, and I don't know. Would this be inappropriate to try and make like a credit rating roll to make the stewards just like get out of the way and just sure. Leave us alone?
Sure, go ahead.
Success just with a 45 under 50.
So they look at you and they kind of recompose themselves, and they said, "Yes, ma'am, we leave him in your capable care." Please, he obviously needs to rest. And then the stewards back off to go and take care of their duties. The lift has arrived. It's come back.
Down so wait a minute. Who went? The ship's detective already went down?
Yep,
by all himself, by himself, right?
He's already dead. So.
All by himself. So he's gone. He's dead. And all the other stewards have just gone about their duties?
Correct. They're not paid to be they're not a militia. They're stewards. The ship's detective gets paid to confront things like this.
Well, gentlemen, I don't know if I'm going to be much help or Miss Kennedy will be much help down there, but we're willing to stay in the lift and watch.
All right. absolutely forbid you to go down there. Absolutely forbid it. It's out of the question. That fool who went down all by himself is no doubt dead already.
Well, Gussie, what do you propose? Shall we go get the shotguns then?
Yes.
While they do that, I'm in the lift heading down.
Okay. All right. So Gussie and Felicity are going to go and try and abscond the shotguns from the skeet shooting.
Yes.
Yeah, I want to see that credit rating roll.
Yes. all right. So Hurst, you get into the lift, and the operator says, "So you don't want to go back down, do you?"
"Yes, I do."
"Yes, sir." And he looks concerned for you, but he shuts the gate and he starts taking you down. And so then you get down to E-Deck, and he opens up the doors and he goes, "Sir, I don't pretend to understand what's going on, but please, please be careful."
"I'll take that under consideration," and start heading off down towards the cargo.
Okay. I'm assuming you are not brandishing the pistol out in the open.
No. It's okay. Safely in my pocket. Right.
Okay, so you're heading down towards the cargo bay, and you see the door up ahead that you had gone in earlier. That obviously leads into the cargo bay. Okay, and so the detective steps out and he shuts the door behind him, and starts walking towards you. And he stops and he sees you, and he's got a smile on his face, and he says, "Good afternoon, sir, and how are you today? How can I help you?"
Hello, detective. Did you, what happened?
"I'm sorry, I don't take your meaning."
"Did you find Mrs. Osterman?"
"Mrs. Osterman, I'm sorry, are you having a jape? I don't quite understand what you're meaning."
"That's the entire reason you came down here, sir, isn't it? Why did you come down here?"
"Actually, I seem to be at a loss. I'm not quite sure why I'm here, but I'm just on my way back up to my office now. Would you like to walk with me?"
I'll nod.
"Very good."
"Okay."
And he's a pleasant, cheery fellow. He walks over to the lift and rings the bell for the lift operator.
This lift operator loves his job right now.
He does. He does.
What exactly do you mean? You don't seem to know why you're down here.
He just looks confused. He goes, "You know, it's the damnedest thing. I seem to have, I don't know, maybe I was sleepwalking or something. Lord
knows." You didn't find the person who stabbed Mr. Vanderbilt?
"Excuse me, a stabbing? There was a stabbing?" And he looks concerned. He goes, I don't understand. What's going on?"
"Well, let's head back to the infirmary and see if we can figure this out."
"Yes, certainly. If there's anybody who's injured, I would certainly hope they've been taken to the infirmary." The elevator shows up, and the operator pulls open the door and goes, and the operator looks at you and he goes, "Going up, sir." And the detective walks in and goes, "Yes, speed deck, please."
"I'll follow."
"Okay. All right." And you guys start heading up. Augie and Felicity. So you guys approach the skeet shooting area, and so there's a guy who's, you know, he's paid for his turn. He's firing at some skeet, and you can see a little cluster of men nearby that are probably waiting for their turn. And there's the steward nearby, and you can see in like a I don't know. I'll basically call it like an umbrella stand type of thing. Is the other shotgun is held in it? So he just kind of manages both these weapons, and you know, whoever's turn it is, they get to pick which of the two weapons they want to use.
Okay.
Well, Gussie, how do you want to handle this?
I just. walks directly up to the shooting platform or shooting station or where whatever you would call it. And when the current shooter is finished with his round, I wordlessly take the gun from him and hand it to my companion and take the other one from the basket and begin walking off with it.
Okay. All right. You're easily able to just take the weapon out of the hands of the milksop who was using it. And he's aghast, and his companions nearby are aghast. And you hear several, "I say," and, you know, "Why, what do you think you're doing?" And, "Hold on there, sir." And then the steward who's in charge comes up and grabs Felicity by the arm and grabs the weapon with his other hand. And he says, "Now I'm sorry, sir. This is, we'll have order here. I'll have order here. I don't know what you intend to do, but these weapons are under my charge. Please step back."
"Very well, sir. Then you may follow us. And can I try another credit rating on this guy?"
You may try.
And I'll remind
you all. Four.
Oh yeah!
Oh, there you go. Damn! Okay, it was going to take an impale.
I'll also remind you that I'm wild-eyed and bloody, so that might be disconcerting enough to quell any major objections or excite others. I don't know,
Mr. Rockefeller. There's your credit rating roll you wanted.
Very nice.
You cow the steward to the point where each of you have one of the shotguns, and he's content to basically follow you to find out where you're going with them. So as long as they're in his general vicinity, he feels like he's in control still. But you definitely have this dog on a leash.
I pause in my unsteady shamble back in the direction of the lift, and I turn around and I look at him levelly and I say, "Shells, bring shells," and turn back around and continue towards the lift.
Yeah, he actually has like a waist a waist apron on that's jangling with shells.
Very good, very good.
So as you guys approach the lift, you can see Hurst and the ship's detective have stepped out, and they're heading away in the opposite direction from you guys as they're heading towards the infirmary and the ship detective's office.
If I see the others, I'll tell the detective. I'll catch up with you in the infirmary.
Give me a spot hidden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm standing outside of the infirmary.
Success. 33 out of 40.
All right, you see him. The detective does not see him.
I'll tell the detective I will catch up with him in the infirmary.
And he says, "Very good, sir. Have a good day." And he continues on to go to the infirmary. Did Catherine Kennedy rejoin us?
Yes. No?
If I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Okay.
So I'm just I grab some scissors from the infirmary, as you know, it's a weapon of self defense, in case.
All right, I'll say that you did do that.
Okay.
So you have scissors. Hurst has a pistol, and Felicity and Augustus each have a shotgun. And I do have stats on those explicit. You know, I do have stats on those shotguns. Each one is different. But I don't think it's going to make much of a difference here. Okay. So we'll say Felicity, you have the 16 gauge.
Okay.
And, Augustus, you have the 20 gauge. They're both double barrel shotguns with an over under barrel configuration as opposed to side to side. They're over under. And they're, when fully loaded, they have two rounds, you know, because they're break open shotguns. You break them open, load the two shells, and then close it. And then after you fire both, you got to break it open again, eject the shells, and that kind of thing. So I got the damages and everything. Basically, it's at extreme close range, the 20 gauge does 2d6, and the 16 gauge does 2d6 plus one.
Okay.
So, and in the cargo hold, everything will be extreme close range because, you know, anything beyond that will just be obstructed by stuff.
Okay.
All right. So the armed party gets into the lift with the cowed steward. And when the lift opens up and the steward sees these two shotguns come, you know, the lift operator sees the two shotguns, he's like, I'm sorry, what's going on here? And then the steward that's in tow with you guys goes, they're with me, it's okay. And that seems to be enough. So the lift takes you guys down to E deck, and
I'm gonna make sure I've told them all that the ship's detective went into the cargo hold and came out strange.
Okay. Yeah, it's weird.
And I will tell Mr. Hurst that we Miss Kennedy and I found some strange things in Miss Osterman's room.
So you tell him about the suitcase that had a hat and a coat, and then about the
vials.
The vials of liquid. And you only have two left. You've got one blue and one clear.
Well, correct.
Like an oily clear.
Right.
All right. So do you guys want to do anything with those vials?
I think Miss Kennedy can just keep holding on to them.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to, you know, on the way down, ask George if, you know, the detective was all forgetful and all that, just like Miss Osterman.
Yes.
The detective had a vial, like, you know, the ones that we found. Probably that's what she was using, and that's what is causing them to lose their minds.
Well, let's go and sort them out.
First, let's deal with what's in the cargo hold. Then we'll deal with the detective.
Very good. Very good. Jolly good. I say that's the way to go. All right. So you guys get down to E-Deck, and so this mousy steward is following behind you guys down the hallway, and so you get down to the door that says cargo. So there's the cargo hold.
Okay, I make sure that there are rounds in the breech for the 20 gauge,
and yes. Miss Morgan's 16 gauge as well.
Yes,
and then let's kick down the door.
Yes, both weapons are fully loaded.
And I'll stand there and kind of look at the door, and then look at both of the stewards.
And no, there's just one. One steward is with
right.
The other one is the lift operator. And as soon as you all got out, he went back up to the first class levels.
So
take out the scissors and walk in behind the boys.
Okay. So the cargo hold is pretty tight. You guys are going to have to go in a marching order. So who's first?
Well, I'll go first.
Someone with the shotgun.
And yep. I think Miss Morgan will head up the rear with the other shotgun.
Okay. Good idea.
All right. And so then who wants to go after Augustus? Does it want to be Catherine or George?
I'll go.
Okay. George Hurst.
I'll go Catherine. Behind George.
All right. And then behind you is the steward. And then Felicity's bringing up the rear.
Yes.
All right. So you guys start filing your way in. And Augustus, you you know, are able to go, hey, and George, you guys know exactly what direction to head in. So you start filing your way in. Are you just like kind of charging in? Are you just walking in? Are you trying to go super sneaky? What are we doing?
I don't think a sneak is going to work at all because of the size of the group. But I, you know, my thought was just to walk in cautiously with the shotgun leveled and ready to fire at the first sign of anything untoward.
Okay. All right. Is everyone okay with this? And just everyone wants to follow Augustus as he blazes the trail?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So you're making your way directly for the corner. Is that right?
Back in the direction where I think I detected that smell, or one of us right. sort of could tell where this smell was emanating from.
And the last time that you were down here, you kind of tried to flank around one side. Are you going to do that flanking maneuver again, or be more direct?
Yeah, maybe we'll do the flanking maneuver again, because that way we could anticipate that the attack will come from one direction as opposed to the other. Okay. I don't know. Tactical combat isn't really my strong suit.
That is A-okay. Yeah. All right. So you start threading your way through, and you get between some familiar cars again, and you see some familiar blood. Oh, that's your blood. Okay.
Yeah, I recognize that blood.
I remember that when that was inside me. Yes. So you get back into that corner again, and you hear a voice say, You're so persistent, so persistent. And the steward looks scared shitless. Everyone give me a spot hidden.
Oh, that's going to be a 100.
All right.
Zero five.
Do I go blind as well?
No, you do not go blind. So what else? Someone who passed.
I passed. George Hurst, 05.
Ah, okay. So George passed and Catherine Kennedy passed. Did Augustus pass?
Yes.
All right. George and Augustus, you guys see up ahead, you can see Mustache, which you now know his real name is Daniel Kelly. Okay? So you see Mustache. And Catherine, you saw movement occurring. So you see some shadows moving, or a shadow. You see a shadow moving, but you weren't able to zero in on it exactly. But it looks like that shadow could be moving around towards y'all's rear, you know, the rear area. So, like, that shadow might be trying to outflank you.
Yeah, I will then shout. Behind you, Felicity.
Okay, and Felicity looks but sees nothing. She's just like, what? I mean, there's shadows everywhere for her as far as she's concerned. So Augustus and George, you guys see Daniel Kelly, you know, the mustached, handlebar mustached steward, and he's got like a wild look in his eye, and he's got, you know, one hand, you know, kind of up in a clawed, you know, near his face. He's just kind of, you know, holding it up, and it looks like he's, you know, intent and focused on, he just looks like he's intently focused on something.
Can I shoot him? Damn it.
Okay. So, what, is your dex? Augustus. You have good decks. You have 16.
Yes.
If you want to get a shot off, go ahead.
Yeah, I do, actually.
All right. Sadly, so base percent with the shotgun is 30.
Yeah. All right. No, 49.
Okay. Yeah. You know, one shell goes off. You'll get to shoot again at half that, so at round 8. George, you've got your pistol. You can fire. Mm.
0-3.
Ooh. Oh, that's an impale. Roll double damage. Roll double dice for your damage.
I don't have the stats for whatever gun I have, so.
Oh, what gun? What gun do you want?
What's a normal sort of revolver type pistol?
A bazooka.
Yeah. Let me see here. What kind of pistol do you want?
Medium pistol.
A medium, so let's call it a 9mm D10.
Okay, so 2D10.
2D10, yep.
11 points of damage.
Well. Okay, what is his con? So yeah, you fire and Daniel Kelly drops out of sight. He's gone.
We won! Yes!
There are more of them out there somewhere.
So, ladies, y'all are at the rear. Of course, the steward is in between Catherine and Felicity. Felicity, you're looking around. You're like, what? You've got this shotgun, and you don't even have it in any kind of like aimed, pointed, you know, direction. It's just basically kind of pointed up towards the ceiling. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not really skilled with a weapon. You know, you're not a hunter. You know, so you're not at the ready to have it, you know. Oh.
Actually, that was part of the skills that I picked was the rifle skill from hunting with father. But I guess not shotgun, though. So she's not skilled with a shotgun, but she has done some hunting.
I will say your muscle memory takes over, and you do have it leveled and ready to fire it at a moment's notice. So I'm glad you have that. But you,
she is as well.
you critically fumbled your spot hidden, right. And so you're aware something's going on, but you haven't seen anything. And then so suddenly, just like really super close to you, like if she wanted to, she could reach out and probably grab the weapon from you. Suddenly, Joanna Osterman just kind of pops up from behind a car, and there she is, right in your grill, right.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at you and she just goes, you know, leave us alone. And as she says alone, she starts kind of lunging towards you and she shifts from a human into this giant reptilian snake person with giant fangs. And so she's coming in to bite you. First, make a sand roll. I need also Catherine Kennedy to make a sand roll.
That's a success with a 22.
That is a success as well.
Okay. Let's see here. Oh, gee whiz. I should need to add their sand loss onto there. Oh, see, I'm glad I'm doing this. Let's see. Let's go back to here. Let's go to... Sand loss is see that there, bogus. I disagree with the book on this. A zero sand loss for a successful. I'm going to say lose one. Each of you lose one because she shapeshifted from human into sand into serpent person just right in front of your eyes, and she's lunging at you with a bite attack. Okay.
I'd say that's pretty terrifying.
So let's see if she can land a fang. And she does land a fang with a 21. You may attempt a dodge at half. at half your skill, because you're pinned in. You got a car on either side of you and people right at your back.
Well, now if I attempt to dodge, am I not allowed to shoot on my turn, or allowed to shoot?
You know, that's right. It's, if I'm going to say you can shoot, since you're not doing a full dodge.
Okay.
I'm going to say you can shoot. But because of the restriction of your movement, basically you're doing a dex times one is your dodge in this instance. All right.
That's a fail. 45.
Okay. So there's no dodge. So I do hit. So I'm going to hurt you. Take 1 point of damage.
All right.
But I need to go to the resistance table. So
in the meantime, when I see this creature attacking Felicity, I'm going to move the steward outside and stab the creature with the scissors.
Okay.
Several times.
Several times.
Guys, you stabby.
What is your constitution, Felicity?
17.
All right. So she nicked you, barely. Who has the higher dex? Does between Catherine and Felicity, who has the higher dex?
I have 15.
All right, so Felicity, you may fire.
All right, come on, shoddy. Ought 5.
Oh my gosh! All right, yes. I like a lot of. I think this is a fairly popular opinion. I think shotguns do impale, but only at the close range, which you are clearly in. You will roll 4d6 plus 2. That will be your damage.
All right. A 1, a 2, a 4, and a 6. So 15 damage.
Oh, God. All right. You, when Joanna Osterman, the serpent person, lunged at you and barely nicked your arm and also, by the way, failed to poison you, she was just leaning against the barrels of your weapon, and so you just pull the trigger and just, you know, like a flower blossoming, her back just explodes open, and she collapses to the ground dead as a doornail. So I'm you know, because of the hour, you know, we're already 10 minutes past midnight. I'm just going to go into narration mode and go ahead and wrap up this scenario. George had an incredibly lucky shot, and he killed Daniel Kelly, who was also a serpent person. So when you guys make your way over and find his body, he's, you know, you see a dead serpent person there. Joanna Osterman is, you know, in pieces, and she's a dead serpent person. You guys make it deeper into the cargo hold, and you get around the corner, and you see a third serpent person. Your assumption is that this serpent person would have been Lester Shaw, the bearded serpent, or the bearded steward. But he's in serpent person form, but he's also utterly and completely helpless. He can do nothing to protect himself, because he's laying on the ground and you see this giant bulge of his body, like a python consuming a rat. There's this giant bulge in the serpent person's body. As he's eating something, or should I say someone, you guys would have all taken sand loss from that and then recovered, and then someone with an available shotgun would have just put it to his head and blown him away. Upon using Kennedy's scissors to cut open the body, whatever remained of Joseph Taft spills out onto the cargo floor. So, you know, and more sanity is lost from that, and it's just utterly horrific. So that is the conclusion of transatlantic terror. So basically, you discovered what had happened, which is three serpent people were traveling from the U.S. to England. And one of the things that occurred to me is that serpent people, while they're intelligent, they're not so focused on the finer details of humanity. They get the concept of changing your skin, because snakes shed their skin, and they're observant enough to notice that human monkeys, they change their clothing day to day, but they don't notice things like haircuts or makeup on women. Okay, and when a serpent person uses the consume likeness spell, like Lester Shaw was doing to Joseph Taft, when they do that consume likeness spell, they consume and they assume whatever hair, style, and facial features that that person had upon death, and they maintain that every time they assume the likeness. Mm-hmm. It and the spell that they use, the spell generates clothing, which is why their suitcases were empty of everything except for a hat and a coat. So the spell generates clothing, and so they just simply tweak the spell every morning and have new clothing. But they never think about hairstyles, you know, it just doesn't occur to them. So like Lester Shaw, his current likeness was from a person he had consumed over 100 years ago. And that's why he gave you guys that something's not quite right look, because he had a look of a person 100 years ago. Daniel Kelly, he had a person that he had consumed 50 years ago. And while his was more current, you know, closer to modern day, it wasn't exactly modern. Poor Joanna Osterman, she was consumed 6 months ago. So her facial features and haircut and stuff were absolutely current and undetectable. It's just then after you've met her two or three times, you realize that her hair is always the exact same and her makeup is always the exact same. Any fool who drinks the clear liquid, that is a mutagen that you would suddenly start growing an exoskeleton until your body can't move anymore and your lungs can't expand and you end up suffocating inside your exoskeleton. So that's a fun one.
Wonderful. And, I hate it when that happens.
And the blue liquid is a dominate serum. That's what the serpent people have been using on people, on the monkeys, in order to get them to do their will. Joanna used it on the captain to convince him to hire her two companions as stewards. They used the drug on Joseph Taft during the champagne celebration with the wedding announcement. And they just simply, after he was drugged, they just simply said, "Follow us." And he said, "Okay." And he followed them all the way down into the cargo hold, where they promptly killed him, stripped him nude, and started eating him. When George Hurst saw the bag being thrown overboard, those were all of Taft's clothing and some nuts and bolts in a bag in order to weigh it down. And he just tossed it overboard to get rid of Taft's clothing. The spell takes 5 days to complete, and they were still at the early stages. They weren't past the bell curve yet of the spell, so it was still early in the consumption process. But that's it. You know, on the show, on the podcast, we had that episode about serpent people, and I even brought up on that. I said, "Yeah, wouldn't it be weird to have a ship voyage and there's a serpent person in the belly of the ship eating someone, and you know, you get on the ship as one guy and you get off the ship as a different guy." That was the kernel of the idea for this, and I was like, "Damn, I got to write that up." And so then when Joseph Goodman was like, "Hey, I need a short 5,000-word scenario," I was like, "Ding, I'm going to use the serpent people in a ship idea." So that's where I came up with this. So what did you guys think?
I take it the blindness was a spell as well.
Yes, the blindness. There is a spell called Cause Blindness. And Joanna needed something to tie to to the victim. So she was looking to rip out some of Rockefeller's hair,
yep.
Right.
Which she did. And so she went immediately to a corner and started doing the little ritual that took a few minutes to complete. But yeah, so by the time he was finally walking over to the detective's office, you know, he gets overcome with blindness, and there is no there's no cure for that. So you are blind for the rest of your life.
Awesome.
Well, I really like it. It's kind of short as well, so you know you can play it in one session usually.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of things maybe we should have noticed. One, that Taff was missing since he was so insistent on Rockefeller.
Right. Yes.
And two, you know, a few idea roles to notice that the makeup and the haircut of Osterman hasn't changed.
So you did get the role for you got an idea role for the hair and makeup while you guys were in her room, robbing her room. But by that time, you had enough encounters with her to finally qualify to get the idea role. You know, it takes a few meetings with her before
right.
the idea was set in. And then as far as Joseph Taft is concerned, I have, you know, this is a sandbox adventure. It has, how many parts to it? It has five parts to it. Two parts are required. The invitation, where you guys go and get the invitation to attend the wedding. And then the other part we didn't even get to, which is the actual wedding. That is a required scene. It is during the wedding. If the players make it to the wedding scene and they themselves, okay. if they themselves as players have not thought to inquire about Joseph Taft, it'll be during the wedding that everyone will go, hey, where is Taft, by the way? I mean, he's a bit of a blowhard and a jackass, but, you know, come on. He is part of our social class, and he was invited to this wedding, and it is beyond rude to not attend. And so that would be when the players – that's when I do definitely give them the clue about, hey, where's Joseph Taft? But until then, it's up to the players themselves to try and come up with it.
Yeah, and maybe that's where I see for lack of a better term, a weakness in the way the social dynamics work here, because I didn't get a sense of threat until we were, you know, really well deep into the investigation and the under parts of the ship to that would, I think, spur people from polite society to do these outrageous things to pry into the cabins and business affairs or personal affairs of other people of their own social class on this voyage. I think that even in, you know, those of us who are naturally inquisitive might have said, oh, well, yeah, isn't that peculiar, and then gone about our business. I was just looking for that stick to goad us into perceiving the threat, or that there was some kind of threat going on here, and not just, you know, peculiarities of character and personality. So that's just something I'd throw in your direction as maybe bringing that out a little bit more earlier in the adventure.
Yeah, and I did leave that out on purpose. And that's mm-hmm. you know, most of my adventures that I write, I would probably agree with anyone that would want to try and criticize my adventures as being railroady. I would mm-hmm. probably say, yeah, all right, that's a fair assessment with the type of adventures that I write, because my adventures do tend to lean more towards pulp action. And mm-hmm. and pulp usually works best on rails. Mm-hmm. My goal with this one, and I'm hoping I achieved it, was to try and not do a railroaded adventure, to try mm-hmm. and actually write something that was more sandbox. The problem with that, with doing a sandbox, is there's no train, there's no engineer, you know, no one is driving mm-hmm. except you guys. And the thing that was put towards me by Joseph Goodman was to write something that could also be used as an introductory adventure for other Age of Cthulhu modules. So when this does see print in the Keeper notes that are at the very beginning of the adventure, there's notes to Keepers saying, hey, you could run this prior to other Age of Cthulhu adventures that are set in Europe or the Middle East. So I named four of them, like Madness in London Town, the Leningrad one, I forget what it's called, Mine, the Timeless Sands of India, and there's one more, I forget which one it is, but there were four that I assessed would because they take place in, Europe and the Middle East and whatnot, that players that were traveling from the Americas to that part of the world, they could certainly take this ship and they could use this as an introductory adventure, mm-hmm. which is also why this adventure does not have an ironclad date set to it. Mm-hmm. That way it's flexible for players that want to, or for keepers that want to stick it in front of different modules that might have ironclad dates. The only problem with that, though, is anybody who's a true stickler with history and might want to argue history with the keeper, this ship only made the New York-Liverpool run from, I think it was from 27 to 32. And then in 1933, it was driven to Japan and it was scrapped. So, mm-hmm. If anyone wants to argue that point, so be it. I'm not sure why you're playing Call of Cthulhu. I mean, you're here to kill monsters, right? So, anyways, so that was Transatlantic Terror.
I had a really good time with it. I liked it.
Yeah, cool.
I liked all the
ridiculous clock for that.
Yeah. you, what were you saying, Max?
I really liked how everyone was, the whole socialite thing. Everyone was very high society. You definitely gave us enough to do with, relatively little or, no kind of, as you say, a rail or clues to the main story for a little while. So I thought it was good, kind of takes you into the element of trying to play around and play your character and be in the scenario and not necessarily have to worry about, crazy stuff happening at every turn.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you liked it. It is a challenge. I found it as a challenge to run because you guys could go anywhere and do anything and you're not required to stay together. And, I do have to come up with some things on the fly. I've scripted five scenes and only two of the scenes are required, the invitation and the wedding. And then the other three scenes are all optional. And they include Mrs. Osterman's cabin, which you did do that scene. There's Into the Water, which you did do that scene, but only part of it. Into the Water is when Daniel Kelly throws the bag into the water. That's an opportunity if you're on the same level or one level above him or so, that's an opportunity to try and follow him and track him down to the cargo bay. You guys were too far away, and so you lost him really quick. What are the other scenes? Into the Belly, or the Belly of the Beast is the last scene, which is you guys did that scene, which is in the cargo bay. So actually, I think you guys – and Hysterical Mrs. Dodd. I didn't actually run that one yet. In that scene, Hysterical Mrs. Dodd, she's had plenty of time, supposedly off camera, to have a confrontation with Mrs. Osterman. And then in one scene during a dinner scene, she's actually dragging the captain in and she's declaring that Mrs. Osterman is an imposter and she's convinced that she's wearing a wig or something. She tries to start pulling on her hair and nothing happens because, she's not wearing a wig, it's magic. And so then the captain takes Mrs. Osterman away to the infirmary for sedation, but Mrs. Dodd eventually would have made a giant scene in public, declaring that Osterman was a fraud. But we didn't quite get to that. So that one, we'll see.
But that could be, that could be good to throw in, say, if people aren't, you know, suspecting anything or haven't found anything yet.
Right.
You know, that's a good, it's a good little bump in the right direction.
So yeah.
Oh, well, nice. Cool. John, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Hey,
yeah.
Thanks, and I appreciate everyone staying an extra, another hour to finish this up.
Oh, darn. Twist our arms, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, I hate playing Call of Cthulhu, you know? All right, gentlemen. Well, I'm going to go turn in, so have a good evening.
Have a good night.
Awesome. Thanks,
or good morning in John's case.
And yes, then Jim and Randall, we'll see you tomorrow.
You betcha.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care, guys.
All right. Take care. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.